Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 125 of season 2. Jeff DeLow, Ken Jack, Gooch, coming at you today with, what's the comparison for the week? I mean, look, we're talking about two movies that we like today. Talk to Me, They Cloned Tyrone, doing a really cool draft. We'll explain why we're doing the draft we're doing in a minute. We do have some big news that we want to talk about. But what the week after Oppenheimer and Barbie is just it's such a down.
It's like when it's right after the Super Bowl when they start talking about the NBA playoff seeding. That's what it's like.
It's very big downer. Tough to come back from. A very big hangover.
I don't think they do it anymore, but remember there used to be that time where like you'd have the BCS bowl games and then there'd be like 3 days and it's like the Independence Bowl with two crappy teams from like the Conference USA and then like the WAC and then it's the national championship. Like that's what it feels like. It's like we just had the Rose Bowl. Now it's the Independence Bowl, but I don't want to say that in a negative way because these are two they're good movies.
What's the national championship that's coming up then? Is it Blue Beetle?
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Haunted Mansion, obviously. We're not reviewing it. Haunted Mansion stinks. Haunted Mansion stinks. Like I don't have much else to say.
Not worth it.
Like it's
bad movie.
0-2, stop making movies about Haunted Mansion. This episode though, we're staying hydrated with some Body Armor water.
That's right.
The show is presented by Body Armor from sports drink to their sports water, which this is it. Like Barstool's hydrated by the sports water. Like the Body Armor regular stuff's great as well, but their water is great and it's got it's supposed to be a G-rated ad.
It's the best.
This is PG-13.
Okay. Can we talk about
I'm going to say the wide mouth. It's got a big roomy mouth on top of this. it's like a classic Ninja Turtles costume.
And if I remember correct, they used to do some that was in the nipple bottle, at least in one package that they had sent the office. Nipple bottle, always superior to all forms, mediums of liquid transportation.
You can put your meaty lips all over that.
Yeah, exactly.
Real hydration, though, real ingredients, a lot of electrolytes, vitamins, nothing artificial in Body Armor stuff. And they also have the sport water. Which is great. They also have other flavors too in the regular Body Armor. They have the strawberry banana. They have the Mamba one, which I know people love, the purple one. Tons of athletes. Ronald Acuna Jr., not the guy traded to the Mets. Christian McCaffrey, Alex Morgan, and more. I would say a favorite flavor, but I just love I haven't had these since I moved. And we just got a shipment. And I just love having the wide mouth bottle. You just drink so much more.
I got the shipment at my apartment too, and like my doorman's like, he's like, yeah, you got like really heavy packages, and I was like, oh god, what is this? And like whenever it says like Ken Jack instead of my name on it, I'm like, oh, it's gonna be a sponsor thing. I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm carrying it upstairs and I put it down, and I could not tell you how pleasing it is knowing that you got a pH water instead of having to refill my goddamn filter every 5 seconds. Very, very big upgrade, especially because pH. This water tastes way better.
Mm-hmm. alkaline water. Brought one. I snuck one of these bad boys into Oppenheimer and Barbie. Got through Barbenheimer with these. Stayed hydrated.
Nice.
In stores nationwide. If you see the Body Armor product, get it, obviously. But if you see the water and you're not used to the water, get the water. It's the best water. You're going to guzzle that shit. Available in stores nationwide. Also head over to Body Armor store on Amazon and link in the description as well. Get your Body Armor today. All right, some news off the top. We'll get a little bit into the meat and potatoes of it just for the sake of it. But there will still be going forward an LCB podcast. We're not canceled. We're not nothing like that. Nothing is. We're not told to shut down. Obviously, Trill left this podcast, what, like 2 years ago? A year ago?
Okay, I honestly forget. It feels forever.
Who?
we've started this podcast, honestly, like it's like 5 years ago, like next week or in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Like we first did Transformers. And I will note, this is not an easy thing to say, but it is what it is. Our audience has plateaued to an extent. I'm sure there's some varying factors. I'm sure I should take some of the blame. The dozen blew up. My focus may not have been great. I just think it plateaued. We also lost a third of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge loss for us. Nobody in the world could ever fill the shoes of Trill. Unfortunately, this is still a business, and we could keep doing the podcast, which would be great in this traditional form, but we decided that we're going to change course a little bit. We're going to become significantly more video focused. We got our website back. It's going to take a little while. The website is going to be way better than it was before. We're working on that. We are going to do more video content, more content that aligns with the things that we're interested in and can pop more and grow the brand more. Because just doing the traditional format of the podcast just isn't working, at least for where we want to be. It would work if we just want to coast, but we don't want to coast. So going forward, we have one more podcast later in the week. I'll be on that too, the normal long take. And then next Monday into Tuesday, whenever it drops, what are we doing? Ninja Turtles?
TMNT?
Yes.
Yeah, TMNT. We have a great interview with Ice Cube, by the way. It was in the movie. Awesome interview with Ice Cube. He talks about, I won't say who, but he talks about fucking crossing up an old actor director, like a legend, just breaking his knees in the court.
We did this well before the strike. This interview was like a month, well more than a month ago.
Pretty
long time ago.
So after next week, we will still have our traditional podcast released on Tuesday mornings, but it will be content and stuff that we film and record leading up to it. So it'll be trailer breakdowns. It'll be some news reactions. We'll still do reviews. We'll pull it together. It will be released as a pod. But it won't be in the traditional format like this where we sit down for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Interviews, whatever pops into it, we'll still do that. So is it a crazy change? No, not a crazy change, but it is a change to what we're doing. We are focusing significantly more on the video side of things, short form, medium form, because that is where we want this to be successful. We're getting the website back. We're going to rebuild it. What?
That's where like the money's at, basically. Right, it's exactly. As simple as it just – it's podcasts are – slowly on their way out, and we're trying to like basically adjust into the better lane. You know what I mean? It's like when you're driving on a highway, right? You see one lane starting to close, you merge into the other lane so you can go faster. Yeah, that's exactly kind like of that, what's happening here.
It's like that meme.
I know there've been
bad meme analogy. Fuck that one. No.
I know there've been some pods cut at Barstool stuff. That's not what this is. But again, we're not the pod just as it is. We would prefer to find another way for this to succeed. We still fucking love movies. We want to talk about a great time for movies. So we're going to do it that way. Ken Jack's done a great job with the bracket. Check out the bracket. Again, you don't blame anyone at Barstool. It may be us or me, or it just is what it is. You know, about the dozen being the reason why. It's not the reason why, but I think we're going to refocus and we're going to find some different lanes, but there'll still be a podcast version of this each week. So you can still listen. I would suggest buying YouTube Premium, by the way. Listening YouTube without ads and when you can listen to it, not watching it, is great, by the way. It's very well worth it. Not an ad. So that's where we stand.
Do you want to address the rumors that Kevin Clancy pulled the plug on us for our stance on Barbie?
Yeah, KFC.
KFC.
Did not like that we liked Barbie. He pulled the plug. I got to make sure not to hide behind my microphone for this. So that is the news. So again, just to recap quick. next week will be our last traditional form of this podcast. Going forward, there will still be one podcast a week, but it will also be stuff that you can find throughout the week. We're going to do trailer reactions, stuff like that. Stuff that it just we feel a little dinosaur-y, and we want to find other ways to make this pop. And again, the website is going to be a very massive part of this. I'm not saying we're going to top Letterboxd, but you know,
we're going to get a way more into parkour and EDM and other things among that nature that we found from some emails. Yeah,
we luckily got back the website, like I mentioned, and I can't stress enough that's a huge part of it. And again, and while I'm not saying we're going to topple Rotten Tomatoes or Letterboxd, those are the types of things that you're going to be able to do eventually with the website and more people involved at the company and the website and everything. So we're excited.
The website's big too, because like I feel like for us anyway, and all you people listening out there, it's like a really cool way for us to in the future be able to interact with you, and for you to be able to interact with like another. For those of you that don't go on like the Discord or Reddits or anything like that, it's just a cool way for you to just see what other people are thinking about movies. Again, finding out where to stream them, what to stream, and like all the great things that was already built into the website. And now hopefully we'll have, I think. You guys will be able to help us a lot with this, with the website, especially because like the promotion element of it is going to be massive once we get like our full legs underneath it. And it was just cool, I think, to see even when the earlier stages of MovieRankings.net, just seeing people who are outside of our sphere finding it too. Because like, I think one of the last videos I saw right before we had to shut it down was just like a random like 15-year-old girl, not related to Barcelona. I was like, hey, I found this site. MovieRankings.net, it's like has all these features. It's cool. And like that is what we want. We want to like, we love you guys, all of our core audience people, but we also want to push and find other audiences as well.
You want to link up with 15-year-old, you want to link up with 15-year-old girls online.
All right. I'm going to cut that right there. And
yeah, so that's so long explanation, but that is kind of the rub, I guess, on what this is. Not going anywhere. You'll get our reaction to news and trailers and stuff quicker now, but we will still pool it all together, and you'll still hear the same takes and still the same things each week, once a week in podcast form. If you don't want to consume it via video, so
Pat McAfee is joining his fourth chair. Also, we should probably note that before we forget.
Cuzzo,
you ready, Cuzzo? Let's talk about mutant mayhem.
That's anyone at Barstool, you know, a lot of people do movie stuff and talking movies. And so we'll have a lot more in the future, but I just want to let people know that now. That's why we're doing the 5 years movie draft today. And then we're doing like movie futures. We're still gonna do like drafts and rankings too, but it's going to be more, you know, anyway, we're still doing the same shit, just in a different way. All right. So we have news to get to, quite a bit of news, actually. Let me pull my rundown up over here. First up, the biggest news of the week, obviously, is that Skylar Gisondo, the Jizz Man, as he's known in Hollywood, is the front runner to be cast as Jimmy Olsen, apparently, in Superman Legacy. Obviously, those things are not moving quite as they were before with the strikes. But how about the Jizz Man potentially being in the DCEU?
Great pick for Jimmy Olsen, baby. I just started out, Gooch, I know you're deep on it, but I just started the Superman, the new Superman show. Two observations. Their Lois Lane is hot as shit. Second observation, Jimmy Olsen's very funny. Yeah, dude, I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. The tomboy look to something about that Lois Lane is just goddamn hot as hell. Yeah. For very horned up for a cartoon. I think Jizz Man, he's great in anything you ever want to put him in. I actually got to catch up on last week's Gemstones. But I would love to see him in the goofy little role.
It was a finale this week, right, of Gemstones?
I believe so, yeah. And I didn't catch it at night, so I got to watch it at some point today.
I'm going to watch today, but apparently it's a really good ending. Apparently they nailed it. Too. So, yeah, excited for that. The Jizz Man. Remember the Jimmy Olsen in the DCU? They shot him point blank in the head, execution style.
Yeah.
He was on screen for 15 seconds, and they murdered him.
I've long said Jimmy Olsen is the heart and soul of Superman Action Comics, and so this is a great choice. Skylar Gisondo will carry the DCU, their landmark character, to echelons we've never seen before. Superman will be back on top of the world, back on top of the genre, in large part because of Skylar Gisondo's Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen, 4.5 ERA, 72 innings pitched on the year. That sounds like such a mid-level starter guy, like fifth guy in the rotation.
He's like the fifth option at the trade deadline. Like you're like, God damn. Yeah,
exactly. Like, Jimmy Olsen. Fuck, my team just traded for Jimmy Olsen. God damn it.
Jimmy Olsen sounds like your buddy's older brother in high school who would buy you beer.
Yeah. He's like Jamie Moyer. Like that's what Jimmy Olsen is to me in my head. He pitched across five decades and randomly he'll be your team's fifth starter at least once.
God. I do love that Skylar Gisondo has become like an actual internet sensation. Like people were like that one tweet went absolutely insane where it was like, where was he for Barbie? Where was he for Oppenheimer? And it's true. He would have fit in either of those movies. He would have fit.
I think we started that. I like to give us credit for a few things. And I think that we definitely started a lot of the Jizz Man craze because we posted about it incessantly.
Hey, all credit to the Jizz Man. I'm jizzed up.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find yesterday, speaking of DC, on the DC Reddit, somebody hacked Variety's best comic book movies ever rankings.
Wait, did they actually hack it? That was just a guess of mine.
It was a hack or something, or I don't know what it was, but basically somebody changed Variety's rankings. So Black Panther was one, and they put the Snyderverse, the Snyder Cut.
Wait, they had Black Panther 1 and it wasn't already hacked?
No, that is the thing. It's their real thing is Black Panther number 1. But most of the list, like, you can get. Like, there's a lot of things in, like, the right – like, the spot that you would assume, Dark Knight, all that. But this list – and I think it was deleted off the DC Cinematic Reddit. It's a bummer because whoever edited it clearly did it to be dicks. And some of us – it was like Thor – like, the first Thor was number 4 overall. Like, it was, like, clearly not great movies. But there was one on there that was really funny.
What was the one I sent? There's one I sent to the group that was like –
Jack sent the funniest one to our group with Clement and Rob.
Inframan, 1975, Inframan, inspired by the Japanese TV show Ultraman, a legendary Hong Kong movie-produced movie.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I wish they would have deleted it. I don't know why they deleted it. I guess it was because it was really fake. Oh, Rolling Stone. It was Rolling Stone's ranking. Maybe I'll be able to find it. Because the list they edited, like, it was a really good troll list. Like, they did a very good job at being really, like, being assholes about it. And because then all the comments, they're like fucking, they're Rolling Stone just trying to get clicks. Oh, here it is. Here it is. This was the edited list. Ready? Where is it?
Yeah.
So here's their actual top 10. Their actual top 10 is Black Panther, Spider-Man 2, Logan, Endgame, Superman 78, Into the Spider-Verse, Dark Knight, Ragnarok, Wonder Woman, The Incredibles. And then this is what the fake list was. It was Zack Snyder's Justice League, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Inframan, 2004's Hellboy, Thor, Shang-Chi, Dark Knight Rises, Ghost Rider, Tank Girl, Megamind, The Old Guard, The Crow, Michael Batman, Batman the Movie, and Darkman. And then there's just a bunch of other, like, V for Vendetta, Blade 2, like, just random things on there. That, and they put all, like, the really good ones at the bottom. It's pretty funny.
No, I like that. I've grown to like Snyder psycho fans more and more. Like at first they were so fucking annoying. They were so annoying. They still suck. They absolutely still suck. But I've grown to like them more because they are just truly like psychotic children. And I respect them just going ballistic at any mention of their man god, Zack Snyder.
That's the thing. It's not
they got a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
It's not a bit, though. It's not a bit for them. That's the incredible part. No. Like, they are so dead serious.
That's why I respect it more.
You see them yesterday? They also had a little moment over the weekend because I guess DC or Warner Brothers, or maybe Zack Snyder really does feel this way, but he was promoting Blue Beetle. And so the Snyderheads do not know how to feel. They're like, they want to hate the DCU, but Snyder, Daddy Snyder, he said it's good. We're going to go see it now.
Yeah, the promotion machine for Blue Beetle for these movies is really funny.
It's barely existent. It's like James Gunn admitting that it is a movie on their slate, and that's it. And,
wait, He edited the tweet? What was his edit? So Zack Snyder... Oh, no, okay, it wasn't... Zack Snyder tweeted, looking forward to taking my kids to see Blue Beetle, period. Hashtag representation matters, hashtag Blue Beetle.
Yeah. He tweeted it? He didn't put it on Vero or whatever the fuck his app is?
Yeah, right? What if he said that? He's like, yeah, sure, I'll promote it. I'll put it on Vero. They're like, oh, fuck, dude, no, you got to put it on something else.
No, he's promoting
app,
it.
Right?
Yeah. He's promoting it on Twitter, but over on Vero, he's like, guys, don't see this fucking movie. Fuck them.
There's Vero. What is up with Vero? Because he's the only person I've ever heard ever use it. And don't know what it is. It's basically the Renner app, but like just that's like pretends that it's not.
It's Creed's blog thoughts dot blog. It's Creed's thoughts dot blog. Whatever the fuck that was.
Also,
they're saying David, it's a cosplayers Ayer, app. I don't know.
David Ayer threw up this emoji and quote tweeted Zack Snyder. And then he's tweeted like 100 times since then, which makes me think he buried it. He's like, he's got to fight. Like he retweeted like at Super 70s Sports. They tweeted a picture of bottle caps. Like he's just, you can tell he's just burying the tweet. He's like, God damn it. They told me to promote it.
So I'm just going through, by the way, Vero. Vero has zero mention of Zack Snyder in the entire wiki, which feels insane considering he's the only big person that uses it. And they have like five subs, like controversy tabs, including the fact that they have involvement in like Russian propaganda sources and also Saudi Arabian propaganda sources, and all of the privacy of the accounts was leaked. What is fucking insane app? I gotta do a more deep dive on Vero.
Fucking Vero, man. I love it. Because you would see things on like Twitter and social like Zack Snyder did X, Zack Snyder announced this, and you're like, where? Like, oh, he did it on the Vero app.
It's like literally, it's Vero sounds like if Vero didn't exist, like if you were to be like, let's make up a social media corporation for a TV show, it would be called Vero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like such a fake sounding name. Vero has its own page in the Zack Snyder wiki. That's how you know these names got to be in the original.
It's like in the Zack Snyder universe, it's that important of a thing. Speaking of Marvel, okay, we got to give our quick thoughts on Secret Invasion.
Big fat thump. We talked about it a little bit on Friday's episode. Right. But man, what a fucking disaster of a finale. Like, and this is, here's the thing. I tweeted, you posted a clip, Gooch, I remember, of me saying, like, it's one of the worst finales ever. And I was like, oh, it can't be. It's not that what they did was, like, outrageously, like, horrendous. It was bad, no question about it. But it was like a finale that was written by autofill on your phone when you're typing stuff. Like literally, that was it. It was like it was not written by human beings. Which again, maybe it wasn't.
I just can't believe they made the strongest character in the fucking history of their universe. We're never gonna see that again, ever.
No, we won't. I mean, they seem to like there seems to be thoughts that like we are gonna see Amelia Clark's character, but I'm like, really? Like, I don't know, man. Like,
and that was apparently like Feige's like brainchild. Like that whole character in that fight scene was all him, like his idea, which is crazy. I think
the Hollywood media machine is starting to turn on Kevin Feige a little bit. Like they're like he's making a lot of decisions right now that don't make a ton of sense, like compared to where he was 10 years ago.
I get the feeling he's almost, at least this is how it feels sort of for him. It feels like he's in the stage of Lucasdom where it's like you've lost control of the beast you understood almost, and he needs like a Filoni to come in and kind of clean up the messes now that he's started to create.
Yeah, I don't. It's, and here's the thing, and this leads into the Loki season 2 trailer, which looked awesome, but there's such a distinct difference between the Loki season 2 trailer and everything else we've seen from Marvel since the last season of Loki. Like it looks like it's from a different planet. Like it looks great. You have a vibe of like, I need to see that. I want to see that. There's an importance to it. And I think Marvel doing series is fine, but you need to have way less and there needs to be undeniable stakes and impact with it. Like Loki introduced, we'll see, what happened to Jonathan Majors, and we'll see if they recast it. The character may just still be huge. I assume it will, because one of the movies is literally fucking named after him, one of the Avengers movies. But like, there's a stake to Loki that made Loki feel important. And WandaVision had that too, but then WandaVision, like, it kind of felt like they just corrected everything and changed things in Doctor Strange, that they kind of went back on that. But Loki has still felt like it's remained important. And that's a big reason why it's like, that's worth seeing. That's worth watching. Like, there's like an element to it that makes me want to tune in, that makes me feel like I need to see Loki. And again, it just looks great. It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one where we were kind of tweeting, I think we talked about this in our group chat, Jeff, was like, what does it mean if Loki ends up being good? And I compared it to like, it's Otani on the Angels, basically, where it's like, yeah, I expect it to be good, but what good does it do in the long run for Marvel? If it ends up being as good as even the first season,
that's a great comp.
It means it means nothing.
Yeah,
I was also thinking, like, what if season 2 is bad? Like, does that just mean season 1 is a fluke? Like, did they lose track of like what they were trying to do 3 series into this? Like, I don't know. I'm also, you said like people getting sick of comic books. I don't think that's it. Like, I've seen people say it's oversaturated. It's not oversaturated. There's just too much bad stuff. This stuff was good. Mm-hmm. No one would complain. It's just not good.
Like a ton of projects a year, and they're all good. That's the big thing.
If there's one silver lining for this, go ahead.
No, I'm saying if everything was great, or if most of it was great, I mean, look at Spider-Verse, right? Like, make good stuff. Like, I've always said it. Like, when you break down the numbers of what the percentage of movies released in a year that are comic book movies, like, it is a smaller amount. It's not like every movie's a comic book movie. It's not. Like, it's a big release and it stays in theaters for a while, but it's not. It's when most of them are bad, as it starts to stink it up a little more.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of the show's problem too is like, these shows having the budget of a major motion picture, like a blockbuster movie, like Secret Invasion getting a $212 million budget, and not only not needing that, it's an espionage show, does not need that, but also looking like dog shit. It really, I think, sours a lot of people, for sure. You know what I mean? It don't even, dude, that last scene, that last fight sequence in that show, have you seen the clips? I know you didn't finish the show, Gucci.
You need the money. How else are you going to get Emilio Clarke to have Drax's arm?
To have Drax's arm and not look like it's properly centered on her body. And again, this isn't an indictment on the VFX teams, which are heavily, heavily overtaxed by the Marvel machine. It's just like, it's a bummer, dude. And again, there's such an easy way to go about most of these things. Like, hey, you don't need Emilia Clarke, Olivia Colman, and like all these other higher profile actors in this show. You can just have Samuel L. Jackson. He takes the big check home, and then you fucking do a small espionage show that focuses on the nitty gritty. And then your stakes don't have to be fucking like cosmos level shit. You can really just do a fucking spy show, like you got just a reduced version of what you did in Winter Soldier, and it would cost you fucking $50 million. Like, why $212 million for something that's that bad in 8 episodes? Like, what the fuck, man?
The ending, the invasion was so bad, and they made spoiler alert, them saying that Rhodey's been a Skrull since Civil War is just fucking crazy too. And and to not even, it's one thing to say it. I can support saying it. Like, if you give enough context and you back it up and you give enough writing and depth to it, you know what? I could buy into that. But it was done in such a weird way, and like the support and the backing of it, it's strange. Like, it's an odd move. It's weird.
Yeah.
Someone in our subreddit said it the day of the Secret Invasion finale. I can't remember who said it, but they're like, that final with Gaia and Ben Kingsley Adir's character was basically just like, oh, when you're playing on a playground as a kid and you guys are acting like you have different powers, and then one fucking nerd ass kid goes, oh, my superpower is all the powers. Like, that was
yeah. And then again, spoiler alert, when he kills the Ben Kingsley Adir character, it's just like when you're playing rock, paper, scissors with a kid and he goes, oh, God, or something like that, or like gun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I got the gun. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
like just randomly had like, well, hey, why didn't he just do that to her like five times ago when they were fighting? Like it was just so
good character too. I like the Ben Kingsley Derek. Like he acted
so well in that, and no one else really gave a shit other than Samuel L. Jackson to a degree.
It's
just a bummer, dude.
Man, oh man, tough. Loki looks cool though, so that's Loki. Comes out October 6th. Very excited for Loki's, and I mean whatever. We'll say the caveat. We are like off pod friends with Michael Waldron, who's behind the show, so I guess take it with a grain of salt. But I do think it looks good. Like I think outside of that,
it's also their best show, right? Like Loki was the best thing that they made.
I think it's like
television programs.
I don't think even close either. I really don't think it's close. Yeah. I think it's a clear
like Werewolf
step
by
ahead
Night, but I wouldn't count that in the same. Right,
Werewolf by Night is like, but we go back to Werewolf by Night. That's what they should be doing. If they're going to do these one-off things, as opposed, do these special presentations. They're fucking cool.
Especially if you can pump $212 million in them one.
right. Donald and I almost read that as I'm so dyslexic. I almost read it as Donald Stern. Donald and Stephen Glover, rest in peace. Donald and Stephen Glover.
No. We're not rest in peacing Donald Sterling, are we?
I meant to say David Stern, rest in peace.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the
Stern. I said Stern. I meant like I almost read like David Stern, who's very dead.
I thought you said Sterling. My bad.
No. Is he dead? Is Sterling dead?
Don Sterling, right? Is his name right? The Clippers.
Donald player? Sterling is the Clippers guy. It's never the one he's the ones you want dead or never. Yeah, he's a piece of shit. Donald and Stephen Glover will write the upcoming Star Wars Lando series. Okay.
He's still alive, by the way. You are correct. Unbelievable.
Yeah, again, never the ones you want dead. The real piece 89. Of shit.
89. Born 34. Christ.
Sure, they're going to make Lando, I guess. They've been talking about it for a decade, it seems like, now.
I think the thing with the Lando one is, like, out of all people had, obviously, varying issues with Solo, I think the one universally agreed upon thing was that Glover was really good as Lando. Like, he did a really fantastic job. But at this point, when they're talking this long about it, and, like, everyone's just kind of moved past it, I feel like we're in a new, kind of like a new era with this sort of thing. Like, I don't know, I need to see any more Lando, or honestly a lot of more of these Star Wars projects. Like after Ahsoka, like I don't know, like I feel like we could wrap Mando relatively soon and just kind of get Ahsoka done and then have a little bit of a break and then reset on Star Wars in a little bit, and maybe talk a little bit of oversaturation. Maybe Star Wars is there too.
A really good just like old pirate swashbuckler Lando series would be awesome. Like I'm all for it. Like I'm all for them doing that. And I think being negative about a Lando show is like, I don't know why, like, why not? Like it's a character that we don't have a ton about, and I'm not saying we need it. Like, it's kind of like the cool part about Lando in Empire is that he is so mysterious. You don't know which way he's going to side, but like, if you're going to do it, like if you're going to do old characters, like this is a fun one, at least. Like there's not a ton of stuff. You can do a ton of inconsequential things that don't impact the movies. Like you can just have like a fun, like pirate, like week to week adventure show. Like that would be cool. I'm sure, unless they've changed their mindset, it'll be something where it's like, holy shit, Lando, like, married Yoda or some shit. It'll be like something where you're like, God damn it. Like, I just can't leave it alone. Like, but we'll see. If it's like a week to week cool thing, like, I am all for it. I just, like, they've been talking about it forever. So I don't know.
Fucking Lando romancing one of the little big guards at Jabba's palace.
I am excited they do have like real creative. Like, they did decide to. I mean, it sounds like they're going to turn over the creative to them. Like, let them do what they want.
Right.
But you almost wish he had never played Lando in the first place and was able to play like a brand new character. Because there's just like a built-in bias with Star Wars like fans where there's just such a contingent that are going to be ready to fucking hate it. Like, that's just the truth of the matter.
Oh, yeah.
And then you try to appeal to them and you try to like work in shit that just doesn't need to be there. Like, I hope they have fresh ideas for it, is all I'll say. Like Andor did.
You know. He's gonna have sex with the robot again.
Man, Andor really was fucking awesome. The more I rest with Andor, the more it's like, damn, that shit was awesome.
Mm-hmm. What's his name? Moss Bacharach. He was in that, and also obviously the Bear. He's got to be in more stuff too. God damn, I rewatched the Bear season 2. He's just so fucking good, man. He is unbelievable in both of those shows. But I need to see him in more things.
Emmy's delayed because of strikes. That's not entirely shocking. Movies are delayed, though, as well. Beyond the Spider-Verse, just flat out removed from next year's release schedule. Though there have been rumors that it wasn't going to be ready anyway. Like, there have been those rumors about Lord and Miller and, like, work and, like, how much they've been working and everything. So that's been removed from the schedule completely. Kraven the Hunter moved back a year. Moved back from October. Kenjack with tears the other day, we told him. Kraven the Hunter moved back from October 2023 to August 2024. That seems dramatic. That seems a little excessive.
The trailers are out.
Listen, I defended that trailer when I first saw it. They played it again yesterday before it talked to me. Weird trailer pairing, by the way. But it does not look good on a big screen. When he looks at the tiger and his eyes go yellow, it looks like a fake movie.
Ghostbusters Afterlife sequel, which I believe is titled Ghostbusters Firehouse. So that's not like... That's not confirmed. That's not an official thing, but most people say that's what it is. Moved from December this year, which is crazy because we haven't seen anything from that movie, to March 2024, and then Venom 3 delayed to July 2024. They could delay that into another century. I don't think I would give a shit, but whatever. Just waiting for Dune to be delayed. Dune's going to get delayed. That's just inevitable at this point.
The IMAX CEO is fighting hard for it. He's like, fuck you. We will not put the Marvels on these screens. Fuck you.
Yeah. They said the Marvels will not. If the Marvels will not get IMAX screens if Dune releases. Funny. They're like, not a fucking chance. All right. Okay.
Yeah. The Karate Kid reboot also delayed. It's like none of these are particularly strong entries, but like Madam Web, I'm kind of interested in that for not horny reasons, unlike another member on this pod. Venom can go fuck itself. Bad Boys 4, sure. At least it's got its date in June of next year. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I kind of like the last one, but nothing else really moves the needle a lot.
Yeah, but no Joe Pantaleon. He's not going to be in it, right? He died in the last one, right?
Yeah, sure did. RIP and peace, my dog.
You're starting to see like other
Cypher.
I will say you are starting to see like other shit just get delayed like week of like Problemista. I don't know if you guys have been following that. Like the A24 movie looks really cool. Mm-hmm. It's about like U.S. immigration, but it's like done like really weirdly and fun. Just got delayed like week of. Like he was just like, yeah, I'm not going to release this in the middle of a strike. And so A24 mm-hmm. is just like, sure. So I wonder how many more of these like movies are going to start being just like a couple weeks out. Strike is still going. We're going to push it. I think that's something to keep an eye on.
Wait, what was the movie that we just saw that they said? What was the movie they said, like you'll promote it? Like we don't need the actor to promote it. The audience will promote it. It's a movie coming out in like a few weeks where you could tell they're like, we don't give a shit, strike or not. This thing's coming out and it's getting, we're tossing that in theaters and getting rid of it. What the fuck is it?
Like the Last Voyage of the Demeter, was it?
The Demeter.
It is.
I don't know.
World is a vampire.
Oh, Gran Turismo.
They're like, that's right.
We don't need the actors. The audience will promote it. They're like, just get this shit out and move on.
I mean, the Gran Turismo audience probably will. It is weird. Racing games is one of those weird communities where like, I don't know a single person that plays racing games, but they are so popular and they sell out every year. Like when you look at like the top selling video games of all time, like half of them are racing games. I don't know where they are though. Where are these people?
Dude, the F1 fans are insane. Someone posted online. They're like, and it was obviously like very tongue in cheek. They're like, oh, a gamer will never become a F1 driver. And then a million F1 people replying like, you don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. It happened. Yeah. He's actually like a really good driver.
It's apparently true. Like a true story. It's so corny though. It's just so corny. But they clearly don't give a fuck about it. Whatever.
Good for this episode.
The audience will promote it.
Got a text from True Bones just now. just Jim Irsay with his fucking thing.
Jim Irsay's been wild, by the way. What a crazy motherfucker.
Ballistic.
Saw two trailers. One quick. They're doing another Spy Kids movie. Gina Rodriguez and Zachary Levi are in it. Zachary Levi, and I mentioned Robert Rodriguez back directing. Obviously, it's on Netflix. It's for kids. I'm not going to sit here and roast it. Hope kids like it. But Zachary Levi made comments about Shazam, which were pretty funny. He said,
I didn't see these.
He said, I don't. Fuck, where is it? Oh, that's a different. He said, he doesn't know what the future.
He's like, I don't know why the movie failed, more or less.
He said, He said he was perplexed why it failed.
Really, Zach?
He said, Fury of the Gods will be revisited in the future and people will see it's not shit. It'll be one of those things that people go back and watch on home streaming or on a plane or whatever. They'll be like, well, wait a minute. That was good. That was cool.
The said, plane reviews are over.
He said he didn't understand the critics' reviews of it at all. Said the audience score was high, so he didn't understand why critics didn't like it. Yeah.
Dude, that movie's so bad, even Spirit Airlines would be like, eh, nah.
Yeah, think about this one.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
We didn't even have to pay him. Like,
but he is the new Spy Kids movie. Fun guest.
He's good for a Spy Kids movie. I think he's a good Spy Kids guy.
Yeah, he's a fun, wacky, zany guy.
Yeah, I don't get. I saw some people. I saw some people getting upset about the Spy Kids reboot. Why?
Why?
Who cares? Who gives a fuck?
Is that some exalted property? Spy Kids?
They've had so many crappy spinoffs of that.
Human thumbs?
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck? Lava Girl, yeah. I forgot.
But they've had a Spy Kids 4 or whatever, Game Over. Like they've had it's not like they haven't touched it since the first one. Like who cares? Though I will say you could still show the new one to like the technology in the original still doesn't exist. So it's like it's still crazy. Like the little McDonald's that they heat up in the microwave. Yeah.
And then the glasses. That's one of my favorite gifts of the kid. With the glasses that go like, they come out like a Russian nesting doll. That one. And also that guy is married to Meghan Trainor, I believe. And
paparazzi
sniped him leaving a sex shop with like $80,000 worth of gear.
Friend of Chicks in the Office, both of them.
Jesus.
So there's another new Saw movie coming out. New trailer dropped.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
see it.
From 2010 through 2017, didn't have any. Then Jigsaw came out. Then Spiral came out 2 years ago. That's the Chris Rock version.
So bad.
And now Saw 10, Saw X. Set between the – but it's also Saw 1.5. Set between the events of Saw and Saw 2, a sick and desperate John Kramer, a.k.a. Jigsaw, travels to Mexico for risky and
experimental. This box, Jerry. You got to eat your toes to get there, Jerry.
In hopes of a miracle cure for his cancer, only to discover the entire operation is a scam to defraud the most vulnerable. Armed with a newfound purpose, the infamous serial killer returns to his work, turning the tables on the con artist in his signature visceral way. It just fucking Saw, but they wanted Jigsaw back. That's all it is. Like, it's just they wanted Tobin Bell's character to come back. So that's what they did.
Where does this fit into the how long before or after from Scream 4 or from Scary Movie 4 is this?
Yeah, that's a better question. With Shaq and Dr. Phil, right?
What's this? It's so stupid.
It's Tobin Bell.
Look what I made him do, Jerry.
Check it out, Jerry. I chained him to a radiator, Jerry. Just fucking I forgot that the Saw guy's name is Tobin Bell. Very not intimidating for a guy that like locks people in cages and makes lasers burn their faces off.
He has a really like he has a mildly I don't know how many times he appears in the show, but he is in The West Wing a couple times.
No fucking way.
during like really like he's a very serious, like just one, a serious colonel. And he pops up. You're like, what the fuck? Cause you're like, it's Jigsaw. You're like this, this creepy motherfucker. Yeah. I don't know. Like whatever. If that's how they want to revive it, they're like, we got to go back. We got to go. Yeah. We got to go between the events of one and two. Like, all right.
It's so he's hard dead. To
he very much died.
It's so hard, especially with like these sort of horror movies, to like kind of recapture a flash in the pan. Like Paranormal Activity, good example. Like with Saw, all of the juice came from that reveal when that motherfucker just gets up in that room and walks out. Like that's like one of my favorite cinematic experiences. Like recapturing that when you know what's kind of happening, it's so hard. And like going back to the well on this, it's such a horror franchise move, which goes back to what I was saying when, what was the last horror franchise entry we watched? Not, what
Scream
was it?
Six?
We just, no, but we watched one after Scream 6, a horror sequel.
Insidious, The Red Door.
Insidious, The Red Door, exactly. This just goes back to what I was saying about horror franchises. Like the first one of them is always the best. It is never, ever, they are never, and it's like I'm such a massive drop off after the first one, always. So I don't know. I'm just, I'm out on horror franchises. I'm so out.
Yeah, it's, I get the appeal. People still like Saw, I guess. The last one was a cool attempt. Like, I appreciate they were trying to do something different with Spiral. But it's just, once you have to start going in between movies, like, I don't know. What have they made box office wise?
I'm sure they make a lot of money because it's horror movies.
The first one was fucking James Wan, though. It's like, it's not like, you know.
They make them for like $10 million and then they make a shit ton back.
Let's see. Budget first was budget. So I'll say budget first, worldwide second. Budget was 1 to 103, 4 to 147. 10 to 164, 10 to 139, 10 to 111 or 113, 11 to 68. That was Saw 6. Then they stopped after Saw 3D for a little while, 17 to 136. Then it was Jigsaw 10 to 102. Great. And then Spiral was 20 to 40, but that's tough. That's still during COVID.
That's COVID. Yeah.
So I mean, it's really hard to really judge that.
Wait, so this isn't the 10th entry? I got to be honest. I'm not a Saw guy at all.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
Yeah, this would be the 11th one that's coming out.
It was the
10th anniversary release, which shouldn't count, I don't think.
Wait, that's what – am I counting wrong? That's really what it is?
At Box Office Mojo, that's what it has it entered as.
Saw 6, then Saw 3D was 7, Jigsaw was 8, Spiral was 9, this would be 10.
Oh, okay. Mine has, this movie coming out would be the 10th, is what I meant. Yeah.
The 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I got it.
I will say,
2014.
If you would have told, like, I mean, it's a $1 billion franchise, like, that's made over $1 billion combined, but I would have thought it would have made more than just a hair over $1 billion.
Yeah, me too. Especially with the amount of entries and with the return, like, the margins on horror movies are fucking ballistic.
Yeah.
Like, you can make one for $5 million and dump out like literally.
If you would have asked me how much, if you would ask me how much Saw 2 or 3 would have made, I probably would have said like $300-400 million.
Yeah,
I know it's horror, easily. But like those were popular,
And they still are. Again, like you could dump out anything, like literally anything, and it'll make a bunch of money.
Especially Tobin Bell. Tobin Bell, dump them out.
Dude, Tobin Bell dumps them out. Yeah, dumps out his jigsaws.
And then finally, Suits has set the streaming record, a streaming record for Netflix. 3.14 billion minutes of watch time in the first month of an acquired program. Gooch, you seem to be rewatching it as well now.
Yeah, but I'm just like, I'll just pick an episode based on the description and just kind of flip through it. I'm barely watching it. I stayed up till I came home from the bars Friday night and stay up till 5:30 watching this stupid show, just laughing at it too. Like it's so stupid.
I have a conspiracy hat on with this big time. I think that there is some sort of backdoor deal where whoever is making the most money from licensing or streaming for Suits paid whoever runs like UX at Netflix, keep this on the top banner, not the most watched page, because that's fine. Who cares? But keep it on the front banner and make it the first suggested thing, no matter what you just finished watching. And that guy, they're splitting the profits on this. I am so beyond the conspiracy. Because like you could finish watching The Witcher and it's like, yeah, I want to check out Suits. Like, no, what the fuck would make you think that's the next logical step after watching The Witcher? Like, well, it's crazy.
There's nobody really that powerful or notable connected to the show Suits, is there?
There's got to be, no, but like whoever makes the most money off of the licensing deals.
Like the Queen of England isn't involved in this show, is she?
some of the names that Ken Jack. We told some of them. A lot of the names are just first name for first name, last name. It's like Travis Tanner, Cameron Dennis. Like that's most of the names. And there's it's either two first names or it's something ridiculous like Harold Gunderson and then like Nigel Nesbitt. Like there's only two types of names in that show.
Hey, once you see Nigel Nesbitt, you're like, that is Nigel Nesbitt.
So I'm looking through the names right now, and like the first one I see is Damon Gumpton. That's not real.
Also, I just passed. I missed this. Ken Jack earlier sent a picture of somebody viral and asked if he's 6 feet under yet. I won't say who it is, but
they love chicken nuggets. Sheila Saz, Scotty Scott. This guy. Wait. Okay. Dana Scott.
Yeah. Abigail Spencer.
Henry Jerry.
Abigail Spencer. Mm-hmm.
Katrina Bennett. Robert Zane. Oh, Wendell Pierce. Nice. I like Wendell Pierce.
Yeah, that's what we talk about. There is an episode where Wendell Pierce is in the episode and they reference The Wire so much. You're like, this is very awkward. Like, this just seems like fourth wall breaking at some point.
Amy Acker. Who are that? Michelle Fairley. Okay. No, they got good. Neil McDonough. That's a great guest spot guy.
I was also joking. I was like, the writer's room, there was not a single female in this writer's room. It is the most dudes. No. Like, the first second episode.
Barkley was in an episode?
The second episode alone is like the plot structure is okay. So Mike is going to have to like smoke weed with this like fantasy football guru who's like really rich, and that's how he gets the client. And Harvey's going to be dealing with like this Mary chick who says that he fucked her, but he actually didn't because he's like this. He's just the man, so he didn't actually fuck her, but she keeps telling everybody that he did, and that's going to be episode two. Like the whole thing is. It's all like just dudes rock. Like
Eric Roberts plays a really good scumbag character too for a while.
He always does. That's his forte, and he's really damn good at it. Respect.
If he auditioned to play a regular nice guy, he'd be turned down. He's got to be a little.
Nigel Nesbitt was fucking Adam Godley. Oh, now that you say it, now that is such a fucking Nigel Nesbitt. Yeah, Holy shit!
Yeah,
he's the Nigel Nesbitt.
Oh yeah, it's the ears guy.
Yeah, ears do. Yes. Yeah.
Seeing him and Lewis Litt on the same screen at the same time does something to my brain because they're like, it's just the two guys. It's the guys.
Titus Welliver plays Dominic. Titus Welliver, by the way, another great guest actor guy. Number one overall, a.k.a. Bosch. Dominic Barone. He's such an Irish-looking motherfucker. That is bizarre. Elias Gould. There's Colonel Marija. Why is there military people in suits?
Dude, you got to watch. You got to watch to find out.
Again, I'm not watching on principle because I think they look too much alike. I don't like that in any of my series that I watch. You need to have – and this is – we talked about building a USA Network show before. If you want to build a USA Network show, you need one character, the protagonist – who acts dumb but is always right 100% of the time. You need a direct superior who always questions their methods. And then you need the hot girl who is basically – they act like she's right, but she's always wrong about everything. That's the pinnacle of every popular USA Network show.
Oh, my God. It's so fucking funny. Suits, crazy. this episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is brought to you by Dave. That's right. Dave.com. As much as we love summer, seems like everything ramps up during summer months, including spending, higher energy bills. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I got a big fucking AC unit popping out of my window. We got a trip to the beach, gas money. Helps to have some extra cash, extra things around that help pay for those bills. The three friends that founded Dave were tired of experiencing this level of financial stress, were frustrated by the lack of help big banks provide to their customers. In 2020, Americans paid up to $12.4 billion in overdraft fees to banks. That seems crazy, but also believable. Dave recognizes that everyday life should be stressful and aims to level the financial playing field and help you out. When you're in a pinch, Dave is the banking app that can help you get up to $500 instantly with extra cash. Also, Dave.com cares deeply about its members, meaning they provide service with no interest, late fees, or credit check. That's more money to fill your tank, get your car repaired, get something you need to pay off the bills, all that and more without waiting for your next paycheck. Millions of people have already downloaded the Dave app to kickstart their financial health. Download Dave.com's app to get financial relief with extra cash, set money goals, and manage spending. Download Dave app from the App Store right now or go to Dave.com/LCB. That's Dave.com/LCB. Sign up for an extra cash account and get up to $500 instantly. For terms and conditions, go to Dave.com/legal. Instant transfer fees apply. Banking services provided by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. All right, review time, and then we'll do our draft. Two movies today. We'll start with They Clone Tyrone, which you can stream on Netflix. This got delayed, I think, a little bit. It was going to come out, I think, earlier. I may be wrong on that, but I feel like this was supposed to come out a few months ago. But They Clone Tyrone, high scores are on Tomatoes, audience and critics. People are just starting to discover it, though, audience-wise, on Netflix. Stars John Boyega, Tiana Paris, and Jamie Foxx in the lead roles there. Great cast. Some other surprises. I won't say the names who's in it, though, for spoiler reasons. But a great trio that really plays off each other very well, by the way. A big reason why this is a movie. I'll slap it on now. We'll give our scores, but like off the top, I think all three are going to say this is definitely fire this up on Netflix. But it also opens up a door, which I won't steal your thunder too much, Gooch, but you tweeted about it. Like, it's one of those ones where you're like, wait, Netflix did this? Like, what? This they can do this?
And didn't promote it because they're too busy promoting fucking Suits. It's like, it's not on the homepage. Right. It's not anywhere. No, but you're going to see those two fucking weaselly mouse men on their goddamn cheap-ass suits everywhere you go.
Also, dropping this the same weekend as Barbenheimer, what do we... Did you want this movie crazy to fail? Like, I don't know.
It's just crazy. Here's a synopsis. Not a ton of greats, but a series of eerie events thrusts an unlikely trio onto the trail of a nefarious government conspiracy in this pulpy mystery caper. It's rather blanket, but it's tough to get too much into the movie without spoiling what it is. The title's unique and cool. Like, there's a lot of neat stuff to talk about it, but it is a mystery. What's the best thing to compare it to without really giving much away?
Oh, without giving it away, it's actually very hard. I do have two movies that it is an exact 50-50 split of, but
Sorry to Bother You is the one that
it's less extreme than Sorry to Bother You, less absurd.
But in terms of mysteries and like pulling on some like social things, and I mean that in a way that is like, I know some people like turn their eye at social commentary, but like I'm telling you, like they do it in such a great way in this movie, and they mix it into the story and how it plays out. It's fucking awesome. Really fun movie. I'm going to give it an 85 out of 100. I thought it's really funny. I thought the cast is fantastic. My quick off the top review is this is a great example of sometimes it goes a very long way when you can just tell the cast is having fun with a script, fun with a story, and fun together. Because it is wacky. It's a little ridiculous. It's a mystery. It's not like the most mind-bending mystery of all time, but it's got enough surprises, enough things, and the chemistry with John Boyega, Tiana Paris, and Jamie Foxx. Like I would label this as like you got to fire this up and watch this on Netflix. Like, it's definitely worth a watch, no matter who you are, no matter what type of movie that you like. It's just a great fucking time. They Clone Tyrone, I give it an 85 out of 100.
Yeah, I think the big thing, without spoiling too much, the biggest like plus is that big three of Boyega, Paris, and Foxx, because I think all three of them are playing like very interesting characters, and characters that like you haven't really seen out of any of them before. And ones that you were, like you were saying, Jeff, like you could tell they're having a ton of fun with, especially Jamie Foxx's Slick Charles, yep. Such a great name. Like him as Slick Charles, it was very much like watching him doing one of those like riffs on like Sirius Radio or like on a roast or whatever, something like that, like doing a comedic bit. And it was really, really super, super fun. Good laughs that aren't like over the top crazy or anything like that. The fact that this was done by a rookie director, I'm also very impressed by, like not someone who's like some bigger, more established name. Everything looked smooth. I think the only thing that prevents me from giving this a higher grade, and I'm ending in 83, is that I think the first act and the third act rip. The second act, like the middle chunk of this movie, definitely like it revs up. It fucking, this movie starts at 100 miles an hour and then just kind of like slows down a lot and then kind of goes back up and accelerates again. I think if that second act was cleaner, it would definitely give it a higher grade. But other than that, like performances, I don't think there's anything you could point out as being bad at all. Boyega specifically, I think, had a more difficult job. And kind of got to show a side that we don't usually get to see, because we haven't seen him get to do a ton of work just in general since Star Wars, like not a ton of bigger projects. And this was a lot of fun, easy to watch, good jokes. I think, and it's one you can pretty easily recommend to anyone. I don't think there's like some massive barrier of entry for enjoyment. So really liked it. 83.
Yeah, no, I mean, back to what Jeff said. That was my first thought when I think 10 minutes into watching it, I was like, this is a Netflix movie. And now that I'm looking at their Wikipedia, they did not touch the production of this at all. This was made by a production studio called Macro, which, looking at their projects, everything makes sense now. They did Sorry to Bother You. They did Judas and the Black Messiah. They did Fences, Mudbound. So they have a good track record here with especially like Blacklight films. The three main characters, the three main actors, Tiona Paris, Jamie Foxx, and John Boyega, just fucking knocked it out of the park. I would love to find out how much was on the page for them and how much of that was just improvised, because it felt so natural. Like Tiona Paris talking about fucking not Judy Blume, but who was it? Nancy Drew and the vanilla missionaries, vanilla missionary shit that they would find down the road. I love that. Jamie Foxx continually saying he's like, I was pimp of the year in 1995. Yep. He goes, kill me. I think, like you said, Ken Jack, I think it runs a little thick in the middle, and I think it gets a little convoluted at the end, which is actually a very much like Sorry to Bother You, where it's like, I see the point you're trying to make, but you're also kind of all over the place right now. Tighten it up a little bit. I think it would have been higher for me. I'm at a 77, which is still a great score, and it's a nice 77. Like, it's like you tried to do something here. Like, you just don't get that on these streaming movies. Like, something like stylistic choices, like taking risk. Like, it looks like a real movie that you'd watch in the theater. I had a great time. Definitely watch it. I don't know why Netflix isn't promoting it more or why it's not like more front and center for them.
Your guy's favorite fucking ass show. And with what, Ned Schneebly or whatever your balding guy's name is.
It's the British monarchy. They're pulling the strings. Makes even more sense.
Why would they want it to be more popular? They would want to less popular, wouldn't they?
Because remember when didn't John Boyega speak out against the British monarchy at one point? He spoke out against everyone, so I'm just making things up now.
Sure, yeah.
This is a conspiracy theory I'm starting now. It's a fun movie. Like, it just wasn't what I mean, the trailer looked fun, but there was just that hesitation where you're like, this is going straight to Netflix. I don't have high hopes for it. And it ended up being just a great time.
Yeah, and they buried it behind suits.
Right. This is also another really interesting example of like what John Boyega can do too.
Yes.
We have seen him in such weird projects. Let me pull
the
up
bank his, robber his, one. What was that?
Bank the one from one. Last year?
Where he was like a veteran that robbed a bank. Like, he was good in it, but the movie itself was like
Breaking?
Yeah.
It was good in The Woman
King. It came out this last year, I think. Yeah, it's called Breaking. He's been in The Woman King, but he's also like Star Wars, obviously, which had a lot to say about. He was in that movie Detroit from Catherine Bigelow, which didn't really hit the award circuit like people thought it would. But this is actually very similar in terms of like ridiculousness, and like I mean that in a good way. To like Attack the Block, which is what his first movie is, came out in 2011, which I would highly suggest anybody watch Attack the Block. It's fucking amazing. It's a very British movie. It's a British sci-fi comedy. like horror-ish, like alien type movie. He was also in The Circle, by the way, which I do forget quite a bit. I forget about that quite a bit.
Ugh.
So I'm on the Netflix homepage, by the way. A whole bunch of stuff on here. Like Hidden Strike, the new Chinese-made movie with Jackie Chan that people know and love and all that. But guess what is not on here? The new release tab for Netflix. They Clone Tyrone. Guess what is on the new release tab?
Suits.
Suits.
How is Suits on the new release? It's not on a new release.
It's on the new, well, it's new, on the for new them. Release tab. It's fucking so stupid, dude.
I love
47 Ronin is getting Ride Along, White House Down, SWAT, the show, How to Become a Cult Leader. Like, why is this not at the top of your list, man? Like, it just blows my mind.
They're like, we have integrity. People aren't watching this, so we can't actually put it in our top. Like, fuck you, Netflix. You rig all of those. They're all made up.
Exactly.
Just put it on there. Exactly.
The spoiler, though, I will say, the ending of it is pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the ending's sick. It was really
spoiler
good.
Spoiler of, like, why it's, like, called what it is and, like, why they landed the title. It is pretty awesome. It wraps up really neat. But I think, like, again, in general, this is like, it's another good example too, not just of having fun, but I think I've seen a lot of people mention this too. Like, there is quite a bit of social commentary on here, a lot about obviously things like black culture and different things and like traditions and things that you may see on TV and stereotype stuff. The way they tie it in together is very well done in a way that it just kind of flows and never hits you across the face. And weaves into the story in such a funny way with how Jamie Foxx delivers things, how Tiana Paris acts, how John Boyega is. Like, it really is like awesome in that way. It has its own unique identity to a story that's like pretty wacky and ridiculous. That's why it separates it. And again, why kind of compare it to Sorry to Bother You? Like, there's a very clear voice and identity that separates it from anything else that could even be related to it, which makes it so fucking fun. And just it ridiculous. Is, again, ridiculous can't be said enough, but I mean that as a compliment.
And this is a spoiler comment, so shield your ears. It is Undercover Brother, which I very underappreciated comedy. Brother combined with The Truman Show. It is those two shows meshed together and done in an incredibly well done way. It's just so fucking – it's so fun. It's so much fun to watch. Like, there was no point during watching that where I'm like, oh, this is too heavy-handed, or like, oh, these jokes are falling flat, or this is – like, the worst thing, again, that I could say about it is that the middle gets a little bit chunky. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's about it. That's the only real negative. And it does, like, detract from being, like, up near, like, the 90s and like the higher vaulted stuff. But, like, it is just so – I just love – and I could see – I could watch 1,000 movies of Jamie Foxx playing a pit because, like, he was just – so goddamn fun. And you know what was very funny in this movie? Just like, and this is another, not me, a spoiler thing, but like the white guys with afros, it fucking cracked me up every time. Yeah,
that
every
is single a really time funny.
The white guys with afros. This is so fucking funny.
They, I also like to, like, I think like it gets maybe a little convoluted at the end, a little ridiculous, but like I will always prefer a movie do that than, and like with a Sorry to Bother You, obviously was a very like jarring movie at the end of it. But it was intentional. Like, I'd rather it intentionally be just a ton to take in than scale back and not take risks and not take chances. Because that's where this would have just fallen in line with anything else released on Netflix.
And you know what you can say about Sorry to Bother You? Even if you don't like it, you remember seeing that movie. You remember watching that movie. Mm-hmm. You remember the ending to that movie. Like, it's a memorable – and that's been the issue with so many of the streaming releases from not just Netflix, but so many platforms where they're just not, you don't remember anything about the movie or if it even exists. This is a real movie.
Yeah, that's,
this is like a real, that's where this movie comes in.
It's like, is a movie type of movie. Harry Styles.
But you mentioned like, it's still like, the things that Netflix does specifically themselves still truly separate as horrible. And that's where it's like, ugh, I just don't. But then they'll come out and they'll say, guess what though? 3.4 billion minutes of Suits stream. So it's like, it oddly somehow justifies their other crap. It's just so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still a movie I'd rather see in theaters, though, too.
For sure. Absolutely. I think that would have been a really cool theater experience. Damn, man.
It's like cool that it's on Netflix, but yeah. So they cloned Tyrone, mid-70s to mid-80s. I would definitely check it out. It's definitely worth your time and worth watching. Very funny.
Oh, my gosh.
And a great cast. Like, just a really good cast.
You know what else this guy wrote? No, you know what else Jewel Taylor wrote? A movie from last year, a sequel. Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. Studio stuff is so hard to like judge people on. You know what I mean?
That was a studio promotion, a commercial.
Yes. Yeah. Right. It was a WB commercial. Yeah. Or a Max commercial now. I wonder if they have to go back on that.
Oh, you're right.
Imagine that.
That movie was brutal. That was a brutal fucking movie. Just a big promotion for Warner Brothers, right? Warner Brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, check out They Clone Tyrone on Netflix. Now in theater.
Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
The next one, a movie called Talk to Me, a supernatural horror film. Synopsis. Oh, by the way, great in this movie. Let me find the.
You talking to me?
All right, synopsis for this movie. It's an A24 horror movie. It's an hour and a half. It's a short movie. Quick movie. Snappy. When a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on the new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. I'll dive a little deeper into that. If you hold on to it for 90 seconds, you hold on to it for a short amount of time, you can kind of break free without really any consequence. But if you extend past that time, bad shit can happen, which, I guess, spoiler alert, bad shit does happen. It's a really cool, unique concept and idea for a horror movie. Directorial debuts here for Danny and Michael Filippo. It's an Australian YouTubers. Movie, technically, by the way. Really fucking awesome movie. Made back its budget and more in the first weekend. Also, shout out to Lord of the Rings legend in this movie.
Eowyn,
yeah,
baby.
Miranda Otto?
Miranda Otto. But yeah, made back its budget already. Classic A24, $4.5 million budget, made 10 million at the box office already. This was really awesome. Also giving this an 85 out of 100. Again, really quick movie. This thing flew by. So it's crazy to go see like Oppenheimer and then go see an hour and a half long movie, which really like with credits, like, is it an hour and a half long? Like, it's like even like it felt like two short TV episodes. Really inventive, cool concept. Nothing crazy script wise. It isn't like you're not getting like a Get Out script or like a, you know, a crazy, deep, intense thing that you got to really think about. Like, it's a very on the surface level, neat concept, executed well. And again, with these horror movies that are coming out these days that are good from young, new directors and minds, it's a horror movie that respects its audience. That's like such a big thing, and you can just tell, and it makes it feel cool. It makes you not think too much about like, oh man, this movie's written weird, this movie's kind of stupid. Like, no, it fits the audience that it's trying to play to, because it feels like it was made by people. And I know you said this, Gooch, I'm stealing your thunder here. I know you tweeted this the other day. It feels like it's made by people, by the people that it's intended for. And that's so important. We mentioned that 100 times with bodies, 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 all that shit. Like, again, A24. this just feels right, and it's cool. And I, another movie that I highly suggest you go experience a horror movie like this in theaters.
Mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of that. The I ended up a little bit higher. I landed on an 89 out of 100. I think that this movie, like you said, it's like it's really good at hitting all of the basics that you want out of original horror film. It's really, really cool original lore. Like, you know what I mean? Like with like possession and spirits and shit, like there's a lot of tread on the tires just because there's just an insanely massive volume of horror movies. But I think that they established what they were doing very quickly. And I think that they did it really well. It was very scary, which is also obviously massive in this sort of thing. And it, but it was never like too dependent on like the jump scare or anything, any particular element. It was just a lot of really well done tension and a lot of like, I would say a general feeling of like creepiness or unease. Really, really good use of sound, like a lot of like gurgling and like weird sound that just keep you like get your skin crawling without you having to be like flashed with an image or anything like that. Really good camera work for rookie directors, again, like with the Clone Tyrone. Really good kid and young adult acting, which is, we talk about it all the time, can derail a movie so fast. The main actress in this, I don't know the names in this other than Miranda Otto off the top of my head, but she was incredible. So Sophia Wilde, I thought she was really, really good, as was the little kid, the younger brother. And also, I think one of the biggest strengths of this movie to me, at least like among many other things, like perfectly paced, like really quick, snappy, like you're saying, an hour and a half, which is always a plus. It has a very well-earned and brilliant ending. You know what I mean? Like nothing that's going to make you overly think about a ton of shit or anything like that. It's just, it's very straightforward. It's very well earned, and it makes you feel like the, like when you feel what's coming, you're like, oh no, is this? And then that whole feeling, I think, is just, it's so well earned, which is so rare in horror movies this day, and very rare, and especially ones with like young adult horror, because like they always go for the cheap, like the cheap thrill, the cheap jump scare, all that stuff. Everything in this movie was really well earned, and I respected the absolute hell out of it. Really enjoyed it, and I'm really excited to see what this director duo can do next.
Yeah, nothing felt cheap.
Are you guys familiar with their YouTube page? Because they were YouTubers. They're the Raka Raka guys. Yeah. Have you guys ever watched any of their stuff?
Never watched it. All I did was hear about that through looking their Wikipedia before watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize that they were that big of a deal, but apparently they are. Good job by them. Like you said, they have a very clear understanding of the fundamentals of horror. Like, they just really nailed it. I don't think this reaches like the upper echelon of, especially in like the horror renaissance I feel like we've been in the past 5 years, of like some really great stuff. I don't think it gets to that level, but it is just really well done, and it's fast. Like, you're in and out of that. I was in and out of the theater in what was it, 85 minutes, 90 minutes? It's quick.
Yeah it's really fucking short,
but it's nice because you're only in three locations. I think you're in two different basements.
House, or hospital, I guess, house. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not moving around a ton. I appreciate it because I got out of the theater and I was like, is there like a really deep, like multiple deep messages here that I'm supposed to be looking for? I was like, I don't think so. Like, I think there is like the surface level stuff, but outside of that, it just meant to be a scary movie. And it works really well. The design of like the possession, I thought was incredibly well done. Like the way they
flip
back, like the immediate flip back and the camera jolting with it, and then the eyes filling up with the black pupils and that sound. I thought that was incredible. Like that immediate
sound was brilliant, man.
Like the way it dropped, like especially when they flip back and the sound would immediately drop out, and then the next thing you'd hear is like either like a gurgling or that possession noise. Like, it was awesome. And like Jeff said, I brought up
practical effects too to add on to that.
Oh yeah, and it's used sparingly. Like, it doesn't go overboard with the gore, but when they use it, it's used incredibly effectively. Like, I had to look away when not the first one where the kid gets possessed, spoiler, but the second one in the hospital scene. I was like, holy shit. it's not overdone. It's just done really well. This is a good movie. Like, it just is. I'm not the biggest horror fan, so I think a horror fan will really love this just because it's done well. I'm at a 73, so a little lower than the Clone Tyrone, but I had a good time. This deserves to be the horror movie being propped up right now, not Haunted Mansion.
Oh, I mean, that's, ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
it,
like,
might have out-earned Haunted Mansion. I mean, Haunted Mansion couldn't have made the...
might have came close. Haunted Mansion did not do well this weekend.
And this was their, I think, A24's like second highest grossing opening weekend ever.
Really? Oh, that's crazy. It's a good-ass movie. You know what would affect really creeped me out, too, was everything involving the mom. Like the effects done, or her prosthetics, in the way that she spoke was so fucking creepy, man. God,
oh,
damn.
Yeah. Like,
it was scary.
When they would look at the demons, it was like, and it was fun. They had fun with it too. Like, especially that the possession scene, like when they're still having fun with it. And it's like, yeah, I guess this is kind of how teens would act. Like, they would just be like, yeah, fuck it. Let's
exactly.
do it. Yes. It was fun. And like, it felt in like Bodies last year. It did feel inherently Gen Z without being fucking cringe. Like, they just
right that's where a lot of these horror movies for a while were really faltering, is that they would feel cringeworthy. And I don't know if it was always because it was they were trying to write to, like, I don't know, like a different audience or something. I don't know, it just, but it wasn't always just because, like, the age range. When we talk here, it's like about the age thing, right? It's clearly for a younger audience, written by a younger audience. Like, it wasn't always an age thing, but regardless, it was cringeworthy. It was just like, oh, man. Like there's a lack of understanding or a lack of care or something. And so many of these recent horror movies, like, there is a personal love and investment for the story or the brand that they're trying to create. And that's why they've just been so much better lately. Mm-hmm. And cheap scares and jump scares, like, they're good when used right, and there is some creepy stuff in this movie, but it's kind of like the guy, it's the Rocky meme, right? It's the meme where they're like, or not the Rocky, the Predator meme, where they're like the two hands are,
yeah,
it's like whoever stopped doing shaky cam in action and stopped doing jump scares, only jump scares in horror movies. It's like the best of each have kind of gotten rid of both, at least for it to be like the crutch of the movie, and it's improved everything. So, yeah, this Talk to Me is awesome.
And it's just really, really excellent at building like a natural and atmospheric tension, you know, which is something that, like, everything in me is going to go back to things being earned and unearned. It really just every moment of a scarier scene is just so well earned by through like minutes upon minutes upon minutes upon minutes of setting you up with all that shit that's happening. Yeah, just loved everything about it.
I'm just imagining this movie comes out like 10 years ago, and like the line, like, "Oh, she's going demon mode," like, that definitely makes it into this.
right.
Like, that would be in the script 10 years ago.
Yeah, like, I bet if you hold that hand, you'll go sicko mode. Yeah, it's like,
good music too, I thought, for the most part.
You know, Skyler Gisondo would have been really good in this, though.
As the brother? Yeah.
Or the boyfriend. One of the two.
Yeah. One of those guys.
Sophia Wilde, by the way.
Not a good friend.
I do want to give her some more credit. She was fantastic. That's like not an easy thing to do. Pretty like good. She had to do a wide array of different styles of performances, especially in the possessions.
I also like how they didn't spend too much time making people like stop and think, this can't happen. This isn't real. Like, everyone just kind of rolled with it. You know what I mean? Which I respected. Like, that, because sometimes they'll be like half in, half out with like superstitious settings and like any sort of or plot devices in a movie. This is very much just like everyone kind of sees it and they immediately believe it. And I did like the very first time you see the fucking demon is so scary. That lady that looks like a bloated corpse. Like, ooh, that was scary. That got me.
They're like, let's go figure out how this thing works. Let's ask Duckett's brother, which Duckett, what an Australian name. And he's just like, I don't know. That shit's he's like, I don't know. That shit's fucked up. I don't want it. Like, he didn't give him any answers.
Yeah, which like in any other movie that turns into like Final Destination or whatever, where like they're along with you for the entire ride, but he's just like, I don't know, get away from me.
Yeah. Just like, fuck that.
Yeah. That was funny. But the other, I need to find the actor's name. The Maori actor I thought was very funny as well. He was hysterical. Every line he had made me laugh.
I would just highly suggest you go see this in theaters. Check out They Clone Tyrone on Netflix. this one's doing pretty well for what it is. Again, made its money back and more. And hopefully kind of gets through like the viral space. Why can't this get the viral push that fucking that Terrifier 2 got?
It's a good question. Because that movie stunk.
Because they don't skin someone alive and dump salt all over them. It's like, ugh.
See, that's what I'm talking about, where it's like, it's that gore was like, it looked good, but it's like, you're not using it well. Like, this was used well. Like, you got to use it sparingly or else you just, at some point, throw your hands in the air and you're like, I don't give a fuck about this.
Yeah, that movie was like, it was like, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but it basically, people wanted to watch like snuff on like Live Leak, but didn't want to feel bad about it, basically. You know what I mean? Yeah, I want to watch people get decapitated, but I don't want to think it's actually real. And like, it's just,
it's okay. This is just Art the Clown. It's Art the Clown. We're okay.
We're like, the clown.
Diarrhea scene.
It's just Art.
Art the Clown, yeah.
It's just Art the Clown. Don't worry. Yeah, fuck that movie.
And if you don't like it, you just don't get it.
Good. You know what? Good.
you don't get it, and you don't support the horror community if you don't like Terrifier 2. Like, I guess I don't know.
They clone Tyrone and talk to me. Check them out.
Good horror.
Sorry. All right, so the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie we're going to do for our last review. We may throw like an old movie in there or something. Our last podcast, we're going to do our hottest takes from the last like 6 years of movies or whatever. By the way, we've been doing this podcast for 6 years this month, not five. Last Jedi came out in 2017. We reviewed Last Jedi, and that's what started this podcast. So I don't know why I said five. It's been 6 years. So we can, when we do our draft, we can go back to movies from August of 2017. But might be funny to go back and rewatch like Transformers The Last Night one more time. see an Anthony Hopkins banger. And of course, later in the week, we'll have our interview with Ice Cube. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Times are changing. Summer, end of the summer is always a tough time. You transition in the fall. Maybe you're moving. Maybe you're changing places, climates, locations, making tough decisions. Sometimes in life, you know, you're faced with those choices and the path forward, not always clear, but there's a clear solution for a potential way to talk about things and to get better. That is BetterHelp. While you're dealing with decisions around career, relationships, anything else, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate your life. Trusting yourself to make decisions that align with your values. Practicing talking to people and discussing things is great. And BetterHelp offers an easy way to do that without having to see people, without having to speak to people. You can do it on chat. You can do it on video. You don't got to go into the office. You don't got to drive somewhere, take the subway, walk. If you're thinking about starting therapy, BetterHelp is a great way to try it. BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/lights. Get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lights. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch whenever you want. Don't feel shackled to have to stay with, you know, that person you don't like or all of that. You can do it on chat. You can do it on video. Significantly easier than the old archaic way. BetterHelp, a great solution. All right, a draft here to end it. Favorite movie this is gonna be since August 2017, so last 6 years. Favorite movie, worst movie, underrated movie, favorite performance, and favorite director. And the director is for one single movie, so a director can be picked multiple times. Let's go to a randomizer here for the draft order. Anything up for grabs? Worst movies may be the hardest pick, I think, for me. There's been some bad fucking movies. We reviewed some bad fucking movies in this podcast. Some all-time just absolute clunkers. Which would you consider Money Plane to be on that list, or do we have too much of an enjoyment of Money Plane?
Emmanuel Grouch III.
I was going to say, Money Plane has redeeming qualities to it. There's a lot of movies out there that don't.
All right, here we go.
Justice, Farce Wars.
I can't really see it. We'll do randomize. Oh, Ken Jack Gooch and Jeff. Can't see it. Camera's not focusing on it. Ken Jack Gooch and then myself is the order. All right. Here we go. Ken Jack, what are you going to go with first?
We can go in any order we want, right? So, this is hard. It's hard to try and pick what I want to get first, to be honest. Don't know if I'll get him back or any of these movies back. This is hard. Like, there's three movies that I know are like my favorite, but I also think are the best. There's one movie that I think is my number one favorite that won't get picked anyway, but I think I'm just going to grab it anyway. Death of Stalin. Death of Stalin, which we have reviewed before. I think that is for best movie. Or favorite movie, rather. Sorry, not best movie. I think that it is one of my favorite movies. Like, when I was on Hulu yesterday, I was going to try and watch part of the Futurama 5. Like, I saw it was on streaming, and, like, I was elated. Like, because that movie, I could rewatch it a million times, and I will laugh a million times. It is just so good, so brilliantly acted across the board, too. Fucking banger script from, obviously, the mind of Veep. And I love that movie. That's one of my favorites that I've watched since we reviewed, by far. And, obviously, there's other, without tipping picks, like, the ones that I think are better movies overall. But as far as, like, favorites go, like, ones I want to just sit down and rewatch all the time, like, that's going to be Death of Stalin for me.
All right, Death of Stalin. I mean, that's a great pick. I mean, probably, would you say best comedy that we've reviewed? If you can.
I think so. Yeah.
Because I wouldn't even consider. I think that is a pure comedy. Like, would you consider a pure comedy or just a dramedy? I mean, it's probably a dramedy. But, like, if you pull the dramedies and the pure comedies together, I think it's the best.
I think it's more of a comedy than a dramedy. Like dark comedy, sure, but I would consider it more of a comedy than anything else.
All right. Gooch.
So this is a draft. So, like, once something's off the board, it can't be taken again, right?
Yeah. Have you seen a draft before?
No, I haven't. I didn't know if this was a ranking or a draft.
You're like the most draft obsessed guy of all time.
Yeah, of course I am. Then I'm going to take Blade Runner 2049 before you can take it, Jeffrey. It's my best movie.
That wouldn't be my pick. That's not my number one pick.
It's for favorite.
Favorite. Whatever. Favorite. Yeah. It is my favorite. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the movie ad nauseum on here. I love it. I love every minute of it. I can watch it with the fucking sound off at this point and still love it. Just incredible. Top to bottom. Denis Villeneuve knocked it out of the park. Should have made $1 billion. Unfortunately, it was a bit of a flop. But
made nothing.
I can't believe it didn't make all of its money back with that DQ tie-in.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like one of those, I think it was an instant classic. The second I saw it, it's one of those movies. I pray that they bring it back to theaters instead of they bring back the most random movies. Now, I don't know if you guys saw, they're doing a Shiva Baby world tour, which I like Shiva Baby.
What?
Oh yeah. It's good. I love Shiva Baby.
I didn't realize that they were doing that though.
Not a movie that needs to come back to theaters. Blade Runner 2049.
No.
I would see that every 3 months in theaters. If they put it in theaters for a weekend, every 3 months, I'd go back and watch it every single time. Just incredible.
Yeah, it's probably, I'd have to say, in terms of like seeing on a big, like, it is probably one of the most stunning visual things I've ever seen in a movie. Like, it was almost like, I don't mean in a negative way, but almost detrimental to seeing the movie. Like, it was almost to a point where I'm like, holy shit, like, I got to pay more. I'm so engulfed by just what I'm looking at, or I'm like not even paying attention to the movie at this point. Like, the Vegas scene is unbelievable. Like, it blows you away how unreal that movie looks. It's probably some of my favorite shots in any movie. Like, if I piled up my top 100 shots in movies, it probably lands at number one.
Yeah.
It would probably be number one in terms of, like, if I plucked from that. Favorite for me, tough, between probably two movies for favorite. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I love, but I'm going to go Mission Impossible Fallout. It's probably of my top 10 best movies from the last 6 years. It's probably the movie I've watched the most. Actually, it is definitely the movie I've watched the most. I absolutely love Fallout. We are the biggest Fallout fan podcast there is. I know there's like Mission Impossible podcast, but like, come on, nobody like Fallout quite like us. Unreal trailers, and we talk like you talk about Oppenheimer. At least for us, or maybe for me, I'll speak for myself. By the way, I could see Oppenheimer like three more times. I'm excited to see it again this week. There's not many movies that like exceed your hype or expectations. Fallout like exceeded hype and expectations for us. I've seen it 100 times. If I'm like doing work on a plane and it's on the plane seat, I'll even just put it on the plane without audio. I'll just have it up just to see it, just to look at it. Like if I got to focus and do work, but like, all right, fuck it. I just want to see it in the background. Mission Impossible Fallout. Favorite director? Tough. I'll go director next. I'll go, maybe I'm giving Ken Jack one for later, but I'm going to go Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm going to leave the big man off the board because there's a movie that came out that same year that I have rated the same exact thing, 98 out of 100. But I just love, like, there's so much in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that is just Tarantino's love for movies that makes me just enjoy it so much. Like, there's just every bit of his, like, heart and soul and what he loves about the cinema is just on the screen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's another one that I could end the series watch. It's a fucking blast in so many ways. Great performances. So I'll go with Tarantino Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for my favorite director of the last 6 years. Directorial job the last 6 years.
I'm Gooch. I'm so happy you guys like Once Upon a Time in the Hollywood, because there's a lot of people out there who don't like it, and I get so mad. The movie's so good. I think it's top three Tarantino, which is like about as nice of a compliment as you can give to a movie.
I kind of get, compared to Oppenheimer for a second, like I kind of get if like you're a big Inception guy or Interstellar or Dark Knight and you don't love Oppenheimer because it is so different than everything else like Nolan's done, because it's based on a true per all that. But like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like, I don't know, it's still got all the beats that you would like. It's not as violent start to finish. But like, it's got all the beats of Tarantino, where it's like, I don't know, like it's always been odd to me that some people haven't loved it.
Yeah. It's clearly a Tarantino script. Like, there's so many things in there.
Oh yeah.
Like, don't cry in front of the Mexicans.
Oh, yeah. the scene with Brad Pitt and the Bruce Lee alone is just darn fucking believably funny.
If anybody kills anybody, it's manslaughter.
Yeah.
Which is great.
So it's called manslaughter.
I'm going to go best director here too. There's a lot of like picks you could make here and they're very justifiable. I'm going to go with kind of a different pick because I do think what they did for their genre, at least their medium, is just groundbreaking, and is, you're clearly already feeling the effects of it. I'm going to go with Lord and Miller for Into the Spider-Verse. That's a movie that it comes along and it completely changes things. Like, comes out of nowhere. It's fresh, inventive, working in the music, the animation style, telling a story that's been told a million times, but still finding a fresh way to do it. Very impressive. And I don't think people in animation get enough.
Are we allowed to give it to you because they didn't technically direct the movie?
Yeah, they did.
No, they didn't direct Spider-Verse.
It was that other crew.
Lord, they wrote and produced it. Yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't direct Spider-Verse. They wrote and produced it. You're gonna have to take. You're gonna have to repick.
Our website is wrong.
I think he loses the pick.
Our website's wrong.
The pick.
We gotta.
Yeah,
fix
no, that. I know what it says on our website. But I know like they're not like. Yeah.
Okay. Can I pick something else?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, our website is we couldn't update the website. This got brought up when the new movie came out. Because we talked to Jake Johnson and he actually noted, he's like, oh, you know, because they're not, he noted like the actual directors. All right, pick again. What if I just like Ken Jack pick it? I'm like, yeah, Ken Jack.
What if I pick another one that didn't direct? Then give me, I'm going to take Jordan Peele for Get Out then. I think.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking, yeah.
Yeah, Jordan Peele coming out of nowhere. And obviously I've liked everything he's done since then. I know people are divisive on Us, but I still liked it. And I really, really liked Nope. But Get Out is still his number one movie. One of the best horror movies of the past 10 years, if not the best. Just very inventive. Another movie, like I was saying with Lord and Miller, erroneously, but another movie where it comes into the horror genre. Horror at that point had been kind of in limbo for a little while. And he comes in and that movie is just so fresh, so cool, fast, very fast. And then fantastic performances across the board from actors who now are famous, but were not at that point. Like Daniel Kaluuya was nobody. Like Lakeith Stanfield's in there. You don't know who
actually Black Mirror was after. Brian Tyree Henry.
A brilliant movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot. That's a good pick.
And Jordan Peele is like, he's in this new age of directors where it's like, that is a name brand. He's in, he's already through three movies. He's reached that status of, you're going to go see the new Jordan Peele movie. Like, very impressive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to back, Ken, Jack.
I think your mic disconnected. Let's do, I'll get Bong Joon-ho off the board. I mean, it's Bong Joon-ho, I think, is a good pick here. Well, beyond the fact that he directed like a 100 out of 100 movie for me in Parasite, he is just, in general, like every movie he's made has been insane. And like, I think even Okja, which people weren't high on, like, yeah, that was amazing. He's going to blow our doors off with Mickey 7. But like, Parasite, the job he did with Parasite is so fucking impressive, because not only is it extremely, like, it's something that resonates very specifically for the South Korean community and all that, but it resonated very heavily with American audiences, a ton, audiences worldwide. Like, it was a movie that everyone saw and more or less like ubiquitously loved. Like, people go ahead and call it like overrated after one Oscars and all that, I'm sure. But like, it is just such a good movie and he's brilliant. There's so many shots in that are fucking gorgeous. I bought his storyboard copy for the entire movie. It's just, it's insane going through like his notes and like all of his just kind of like thought processes trying to like set scenes up. And he's a fucking genius, man. He's just a genius filmmaker and just a badass. He's a great personality.
He's hilarious. He's the fucking man. That's the other thing too.
Yeah, exactly. Super funny.
Him making the Oscars like, kiss on like after. Very funny.
Yeah. Right. There are so many like directors and stuff, and like, this is, they're awesome, but like, some of them are like, there's just that Hollywood-ishness to them where you're like, ah, they're kind of fucking like, not dorks, but like, they're kind of like douchebags, or like, there's just like this vibe. You're like, ah, they're so robotic. Bong Joon-ho's just the man. Like, he's just awesome. It's a good time.
Dude, I'm so excited for Mickey 7. That next movie he's doing with, like, Robert Pattinson. Oh,
yeah. Combination of like our favorite things. Bong Joon-ho and Robert Pattinson. Okay, so best or favorite director there. I'll do for favorite performance. There's a lot of really good performances from the last years, and you can call this recency bias or whatever, but I'll get Mia Goth from Pearl. Mia Goth and Pearl, I think, was so unbelievably slept on in obviously Oscar season in a disgusting manner by the Academy. It is an incredible job. Whatever you think of the movie, like, I wouldn't fault you one way or another, but that she carries that movie on her back, and she is just so excellent. Every scene is what it is because of what she does to it. And that closing, like, they're not totally closing, but like that 7-minute like monologue is unbelievable. It is insane. No breaks, no nothing. Just, and she, and obviously we interviewed Ty West, like, she did on the fourth take, like, just nailed it. Just an incredible, really, really, really fascinating job by her in that movie. And just, it was fantastic. So I'll go with Goth.
Yeah, no, I considered Goth there too. Also, like, people are pushing for Sophia Wilde and Talk to Me already. They're like, hope she gets a nom at this year's Oscars. If Mia Goth didn't get one, I'm sorry. There's just no chance.
Yeah, like, no chance. You're not going to get like a genre gimme like someone would get, like a specific actor would get later.
For underrated, the real question is, how underrated should we go here? Because there are movies.
It's tough.
I think we should say underappreciated. I think that should be.
We'll say underappreciated. I like that. That's a good call.
Yeah, because there's movies like Wind River obviously doesn't have a massive like base of like people who have seen it outside of like probably our age group, like men in our age group. But I do feel like it's not necessarily underrated, if that makes sense.
You could say, maybe even underappreciated would be wrong with Wind River, because everyone that has seen it appreciates it shit ton. And I think I got a really good second run on Netflix.
Like, I'll give you an example, one that I didn't think counted. Like, Dolomite Is My Name is one that I looked at. Like, I love Dolomite Is My Name is awesome, but like, really high critic score. Can you see me? Okay. Really high critic score, really high audience score. He got a Globe nomination. Like, I could be kind of weird to say it's like it may be underappreciated, but like, I just didn't think that counted. Like, it'd be fucking cheap.
All right. I'm going to come back to that one then. I have some different movies popping around in my head. And
I have a good one, I think.
I have a very easy pick for worst movie, and that would be Holmes and Watson. Just one of the most offensive things that I've ever seen in my whole fucking life.
Is that your pick?
Yeah, Holmes and Watson. Fuck that movie. Just, I've never seen something try to be so funny and be not funny. It's trying so hard to be funny, and it just isn't at any point. Like, there's a joke every 30 seconds, and none of them hit.
And everyone is bad. They're so bad. Oh.
You knew you could sum that movie up by how bad a job they did with, like, the slow motion scene when they're fighting.
Oh, LA Wi-Fi.
Am I good? Can you see me?
Yeah.
Yeah, now I got you.
I disconnect this mic. This guy fucked everything up. You can tell just by the slow motion scene when they're fighting in the boxing ring. It's like the fact that they couldn't make that funny. That was it. If you can't parody that well, give up. Move on to a different project. That movie. It's the only DMCA we've ever had on, like, the only DMCA on our account. Copyright strike, like a strike. Right. Like, the LCB Twitter got in trouble for it, and like, you can't do that again. Was the Holmes and Watson poster. The fucking poster, not a clip. I keep freezing.
It's funny because Iron Man thing keeps freezing.
Gloria Sanchez Productions have silenced Jeff.
Hold on, I'm going to drop out. Hold on.
Is that Gloria Sanchez or was it?
What is it?
Gary Sanchez.
Yes, sorry.
Wait, but there is a Gloria Sanchez, right? But that's the one that did the female-centric ones?
Yeah, I think so.
Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, I think you're right.
But he's you're dead on with Holmes and Watson regardless, because the more – or there's even more – I don't know if you're going to have to cut this regardless to make this fit into boxes. But okay, so I think what's very interesting about the case of Holmes and Watson is that it was – combining two actors that we know had really good chemistry from one of our favorite Lifetime comedies, and not comedy that's on Lifetime, like just from our Lifetime, like generational comedies. Yeah. And obviously Adam McKay, loose involvement, like that, it should have been sort of a home run, you know, like just on paper like that. You think like that's going to work. And man, did it just fucking stink.
They had the balls to release this movie at fucking Christmas. Like, you know how much like a studio has to have confidence in a movie to release it at Christmas, knowing that people are going to go watch it. Like, no matter what you put out at Christmas, people are going to see your movie if you release it during the holidays. And they put that right in front of fucking America's face and said, "Watch this shit."
Oh, that's right. This is directed by Ethan Coen, not Ethan Coen. I forgot about that. Oh, it's funny because the writers credit Ethan Coen, Arthur Conan Doyle. Yeah, one of my favorite things from that last episode of Long Take.
Oh my gosh! See what other
Homer has like a 50.
He's got 316 credits. See if there's anything weird. It's all Sherlock Holmes.
No,
stuff.
This is what we want to see. We want to see the quotes from the movie. A bit of cocaine is great in the morning. This is so bad. No wonder my room always smells like fish pie and swamp. Oh boy. Even if you don't need the context to know that's not funny. Holy shit. Sure. Something about stomach influenza and shaking hands with a prostitute.
This is how bad this movie was. This is in the trivia section. Uh-huh. According to Deadline, after disastrous test screenings, Sony attempted to sell the film to Netflix, who declined.
Wow, that's how you know they were down bad.
Even Netflix was like, no, this is a piece of shit. We will not have this. Apparently.
Dude, that run of.
Jeff, apparently the Sony tried to sell Holmes and Watson to Netflix. Netflix wouldn't even buy it.
It's truly like just one of the worst things we've ever seen. I went with one of our coworkers, Nate, and he's like, come on, that's like had a couple laughs. I'm like, dude, no. He's like, I know, it was pretty bad. He's like, you didn't laugh like once. I go, no, not even a pity laugh.
This is
unbelievably bad.
This
movie
is so mean. In the movie's trivia section on IMDb, it says, during the opening days of its Christmas 2018 release, exhibitors reported an astonishing number of walkouts. That's just in the trivia section.
An astonishing number. Holy shit.
Oh my gosh. It's not even a stat.
It's like so unnecessary, but true.
To give you context of how bad some of the movies that we've seen in the 6 years of this podcast, it's a 4 out of 100. There is a significant amount of movies below it too.
Yeah. Dude, I'm just going through some of Will Ferrell's like filmography from the last couple of years. Like Spirited, that movie that I'm pretty sure actually never came out. Eurovision, which had its moments, but like Downhill, one of the worst American adaptations of a movie ever made, period.
Yep.
Drunk Parents, Holmes and Watson, Daddy's Home 2, The House, Zoolander 2, Daddy's Home, Get Hard.
I hate The House.
The House was so bad. It was so fucking bad. Casa de mi Padre, The Campaign. Like, it's just tough. I will say the one funny part, because Daddy's Home 2 came on after I watched something on Paramount Plus, I forget what, that when John Lithgow comes down the stairs and starts like kissing Will Ferrell and like, and they're like, yeah, that's what sons and dads do. Like that part still makes me laugh. Nothing else in that movie really does anything for me though.
All right. So Holmes and Watson off the board. Unfortunately, you guys can no longer take it.
Yeah,
I gave it a 4. I can't call it the worst.
That's just 4 times higher than it should have been. you're up, Mr. Lowe.
No, I think. Wait, yeah, that's right. Best of back to back me. I'll go worst as well. There's a couple. I've given out 1, 2, 3, 7 zeros since we started this podcast. If I had to pick the worst. The worst. It wouldn't be. It's the 4th worst. And I hope there's one that Ken Jack picks. I hope Ken Jack's worst is the one that I expect him to pick. But I have to go with the wrong Missy. A fucking 0 out of 100. Yeah. One of the most. The Wrong Missy is, I think, truly the most annoying movie I've ever watched in my life. I've never been more annoyed by. I forgot I gave.
Hellstar.
Hold on, I forgot I gave the Selma Hayek Owen Wilson movie Bliss a 0 out of 100.
So bad.
Terrible movie. Yeah, that the Hellstar scene in Wrong Missy is the single most annoying scene I've ever seen in a movie. I hate that movie so much. And I don't hate Lauren Lapkus, but it is the most. It's somehow the most overacted. The two main characters, it's the most overacted character that I've ever seen in a movie with Lauren Lapkus' character, and then the most underacted character with David Spade's character. It's the worst combo of co-leads I've ever seen in a movie. It is so bad. The Wrong Missy is atrocious. Atrocious.
Real bad.
The funny part about The Wrong Missy is the shocking number of defenders defenders it has.
It does.
Yeah, that is really crazy how many people actually genuinely like just defend it. I mean, we shit on it.
I mean, awful.
That is just fucking, okay. Performance is a tough one. There's a lot, but I do think this is like pretty much my 1A. Without much debate, and that's Saoirse Ronan and Lady Bird. I love Saoirse Ronan and Lady Bird. I think it's a performance that, I mean, I think it probably should have won an Oscar. I forget what was it. Was 3 Billboards that year? Frances McDormand. It was a stacked year. That was a crazy. I think I, Tonya was another one that year. It was a crazy year for Best Actress nominees. But I think Saoirse Ronan was unbelievable in that role. People talk about like Greta Gerwig and with Barbie now and like, you know, speaking to it all. But like, I think Lady Bird in terms of like speaking, I mean, I guess I'm not a teenage girl, but in terms of like the idea of like young, like going to college as a kid, you know, moving on from high school, like there's so much that is said in that movie. And that role is just so perfectly acted by Saoirse Ronan. So I'd say Saoirse Ronan, Lady Bird's my favorite performance. Yeah, it's Saoirse Ronan, Lady Bird, Margot Robbie, I, Tonya, Frances McDormand, 3 Billboards. Then it was Sally Hawkins, Shape of Water, and Meryl Streep, The Post. Oh, I can't believe they. What a joke. No,
it's very believable. It is.
Meryl Streep as Meryl Streep in The Post. Unbelievable performance. Anyway, that's my pick. Back to you, Gooch.
Sierra, what do we have left on the board?
You have underrated and favorite.
Okay. I'll just piggyback off
your performance.
I'll piggyback off your best performance because I am going from a Saoirse Ronan led movie, but it is a supporting performance. I'm going with Florence Pugh in Little Women. I fucking love Florence Pugh in Little Women. I love that movie. I think it's Greta Gerwig's best movie. The movie, every time I watch it, I like it more. And in large part because Florence Pugh, every scene she's in, she fucking steals it. She's amazing. She's incredible in it. She's hot in it. There's no getting around that. I love Amy. Amy March. I spent my whole life, second to Joe, and I won't. I won't. Oh, so good.
You really fucking love Little Women. What the? I knew you liked it, but you love that movie.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, huh? Chris Hansen going to need to sit you down, buddy?
They're women. The title is Little Women. It's not Little Girls. God damn it. That would be funny. Chris Hansen shows up at a showing of Little Women. Why don't you take a seat right here? E8.
No, I mean, okay. Surprise. I Little Women for me is the definition of just some periods I can't do. It's a good movie. I like it, but I'm never I'm not going to dock it point because it's in that period. But for me, like I'll never,
it's called cottage.
It's a period. I'll never just,
there's love. A word for it. It's called cottage core.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're east correct. That and is
I,
real.
I love it.
Yuck. Ken Jack, you have underrated. I guess we all have underrated movie left. I'm interested here.
Underrated and worst I have left. Right. And these are my last two.
Yeah.
I'll get worse out of the way, and it'll be Dad Boat. It's got to be Dad Boat.
Oh, you didn't pick the one I thought you'd pick.
You thought? What'd you think? I was a tall girl.
Rideshare.
No, I don't remember enough about Rideshare other than it being unwatchably bad and putrid.
You know what? Don't justify the existence by picking it either.
Yeah, that's fair. Because we're gonna get another YouTube video where this guy tries to like scroll through my fucking down, bozo. Stay on my dick.
He just made YouTube video after YouTube video about you.
Yeah.
One reviewer.
Fucking the dick writing was real. I'm going to go with Dad Boat, though, Serenity. Serenity, one of the weirdest movies I think I've ever watched in my entire life. It is a combination of some really, really good actors, like McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, Jason Clarke, Jaimin Hansu, fucking Jason Strong is in like a 2 second part in this movie. Like combination of great people, Stephen Knight, the dude who wrote Peaky Blinders, like good people. And then just this movie is about a little, like a teenage kid, like playing an RPG character where he plays his dad and he fucks his mom. It is this, it's just the fucking weirdest movie in the world. It is so dense and so stupid and so like it thinks it's so fucking smart and dramatic, and it is just so bad. What a horrible movie. Like an unbelievably bad and unwatchable movie that has one of the worst payoffs I think I've ever. This would be like if like you worked out for a month straight and gained 100 pounds. You know what I mean? Like it's just like there was no positive payoff for having to wait through that slog of a movie to get to that.
Even Jaimin Hansu, we interviewed, was like, I don't know what that movie is.
Yeah. He's like, they flew me out to the island to hang out and film. And I was like, yeah, sure. Just a real bad movie, Dad. But
it really cannot be stressed enough that he fucked his mom. Like it just really can't.
He played a video game and fucked his mom in it. What the fuck? Like, how is that supposed to be like I refuse to go any further on it. Dad Boat, I think, is the worst. There's been movies, again, like Rideshare and stuff like that, where it's like a DNF. But like, as far as the impact that it has sit with me, like Dad Boat is right up there. Wrong Missy for sure, too. But Dad Boat is one that it sat with me for a long time and still does, like when I think of bad movies. And for underappreciated movie, I got a lot in the list. I'll pick ones that I don't think you guys would pick, just to throw them out there as quick honorable mentions. Like The Gentleman, I would consider underappreciated among Guy Ritchie's catalog. I think it's a really good movie.
I consider it a little underappreciated just because it came out during COVID and all that, right?
Yeah. The Art of Self-Defense, by Riley Stearns, I thought was really, really funny. Not really, like, barely anyone saw that. We interviewed Jesse mm-hmm. Eisenberg for that movie. And also Fresh, I think, would be up there from on Hulu, Sebastian Stan and Daisy Edgar Jones. But the one I'll pick is Leave No Trace. Leave No Trace didn't get any Oscar nominations, which feels crazy because both Ben Foster and Thomasin McKenzie were absolutely insanely good.
He didn't get nominated that movie for that? Is it.
No one got anything for that. I was just looking at their awards. Like, I got like a what? Saturn Award. Like, it's crazy. But Leave No Trace, there's Deborah Granik, right? It's an unbelievably good movie. I know a lot of people have it on its like top tens and all that shit. Yeah, just won National Board of Review, LA Film Critics, San Diego Film Critics, like nothing really. It's crazy. But it's like two of the best performances, I think, of that year from Ben Foster and from Thomasin McKenzie. It's brilliant. It's super, like, I think it moves along really well too. And it's just really like the way it's shot is just, you get like the really beautiful scenes, like out in the Pacific Northwest, but also it's just like, you get a really good emotional story about a dad and a daughter and the dad dealing with his previous, like PTSD basically. And not a lot of people saw it. Like, you talk to people about like some of the favorite movies of the last years, it's rarely mentioned. I think it's like when I was looking at movie rankings for my top movies of the last like 20s, it's like, I think number like 10 or 9 or 11 or something for me. And it is a fantastic, fantastic movie that more people should watch. It was incredible.
Good pick. Thomasin McKenzie.
It's still gone. Rotten Tomatoes is loading slow, but it's still 100% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Good question. I mean, Armand White probably reviewed it since it was 100%.
So. No, it still does. 252 reviews, 100% of Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, it's awesome. Nice. That's a great pick. Super underappreciated.
Not underrated, because it is literally the highest rating you could possibly get, but underappreciated.
No, I think that fits completely. I think it fits completely. Got no awards. Got no no recognition award shows. That's a good pick. Gooch, underrated movie.
This is a movie that I think is both underappreciated and a little underrated, just looking at the scores, especially IMDb, Metacritic, a little higher on Rotten Tomatoes. People say no good comedies the past 10 years. I think there's a caveat with a few, one of them being Game Night. I think Game Night is fucking hilarious. A movie that on rewatch, even funnier, like everything just really works for it. Like the running gags work, the bits work, all the chemistry between the characters, the way they play off of each other. It works. Like, it's just one of those movies you didn't know what to expect going in, and you probably expected it was going to be shit because comedy is just what it is right now, even though it's making a bit of a comeback. And that just shocked me. Like, it's fun. Like, it's just a fun movie. Jason Bateman, just has he been in a better movie? I don't know. Rachel McAdams is always great.
I think Horrible Bosses is better. I like Horrible Bosses.
He's really funny in Horrible Bosses too. Yes. That whole cast, top to bottom, is so good.
Are they? All of them?
Yeah. Well, on screen. On screen.
Game night's I like Game Night, but I haven't, like, I guess that makes, at least to your point, maybe it's underappreciated. I like Game Night, and the more I watch, the more I like it and realize Kenjack and I saw Game Night really drunk, by the way, in Hoboken.
Yeah, you're right.
Hoboken.
Yeah.
We went to like St. Patrick's Day, like the beer garden, and then we went and we saw it very drunk.
We were just like, let's go watch Game Night. We were dying.
Right, like, knocked over an entire share bag of M&Ms all over the floor in Hoboken. It is funny, but it's one of those ones where the more I watch it, the more I'm like, that happens with comedies a lot too, where you're like, oh, I liked it. And then you start to realize when you rewatch it, you're like, oh, that's a funny line. You're like, oh, fuck. There is so many funny moments in this movie. I mean, the Tostitos Scoops line is like one of our favorite lines in the history of this podcast. So,
dude, that's great. And then when Rachel McAdams actually shoots Jason Bateman, like she's dancing around with that gun. It's basically the Jonah Hill bit from This Is the End. But yeah. It's so good.
My underrated picks, there's a couple I left on the board here. There's two Shia LaBeouf movies, Honey Boy and The Peanut Butter Falcon, which I do think are a little underappreciated. Thoroughbreds would be a big one that is underappreciated. Yeah. I love Thoroughbreds. Olivia Cooke, Anya Taylor-Joy, rest in peace, Anton Yelchin. Yeah. Also the guy who plays the author in House of Cards.
That's right. Can't forget him.
What's that guy's name again in House of Cards?
Thomas something...
Tom Yates.
Yates, yeah.
They all fuck each other. Yeah. It's a really confusing will they, won't they subplot of, wait, does he also like like Frank Underwood?
Yeah. No, that was just who's the bodyguard? Percy. Fuck. Meet him. Yeah.
Searching, but I'm gonna go with a movie actually one of our coworkers is in, Roan. It's called Bodied. It's a battle rap movie.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who like kind of gets in the battle rap. It is an awesome fucking movie. You've never seen Body, I highly suggest you watch Bodied. I don't even know where it's streaming now. Our website hasn't been updated in a while. Changing soon. Done by Neon. Neon does a lot of cool projects like this. Really cool, like battle rap. Stylistic movie. I highly suggest Bodied. It's one that we haven't talked a ton about. Kendrick and I have it mid to high 80s as well. So I'd say Bodied, super underappreciated movie in the last like 6 years. So yeah, that's our those are our lists. Those are our list of underrated, best, favorite, worst movie. There's other worst movies, by the way, that I'd mention. Bye Bye Man. Horrible. The Pee Pee Poo Poo Man. Bobblehead.
Pee Pee Poo Poo Man. I forgot.
The Bobbleheads movie. Obviously, my Music. God,
man, that one I wiped my fucking memory forever. Holy
Bobblehead movie. Do you know what that one is, Gooch?
Are you talking about Hook on the Pod?
Were you?
Are you talking about Marwin?
No, it was a movie about Bobbleheads. The movie.
No, you weren't with us yet. Bobblehead's the movie.
It was too early for the brand synergy movies. It was too early. It paved the way for Barbie.
It starred Cher. Cher was in it.
Oh, that fucking movie. Oh, yeah. God. I remember the trailers to that, and then Cher pops up. Cher comes out of nowhere in those trailers.
There are some others, though. Wish Upon, Gotti, Fantasy Island, Gotti. Slender Man,
Gotti.
Leatherface.
The Avengers of Justice Farce Wars, don't forget. With 9-11 Kevin.
Brahms the Boy 2.
Brahms the Boy 2. What happened to Brahms the Boy 1? Bobblehead.
Avengers of Justice, the Farce War.
9-11 Kevin and 9-11 Kevin and Shawn Michaels were in that. It's just a bizarre.
Underratedly terrible movie, by the way, is The Hustle.
Yes. The one with that's up on my list. Worst.
Yeah. Ken Jack and I gave it a combined 8 out of 200.
The Circle.
Horrendous movie. Terrible remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Just embarrassingly bad.
I just like going through this, but this bottom list of ours on movie rankings is so funny.
There's some bad fucking movie. Wish Upon Snowman. Was really bad. Oh, the Snowman, it's an incomplete movie. Just they just released a not finished movie.
Tall Girl.
Another underappreciated be Upgrade, by the way.
That's Upgrade
was really good.
That was my first pick. And then
I would have counted that.
And then I was like, I was looking at the scores and I was like, well, most people recognize it as a good movie, like a really good movie.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But that is a phenomenal
Cats
movie.
Cats has got to be out there. Artemis Fowl.
Don't talk about my motherfucking boy Mulch Diggums.
Mulch Diggums. I forgot his name.
Oh my
Ma. God. Oh, remember Ma?
No, Ma is kind of funny.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Ma was so bad. Oh, Holiday. That one stunk.
Come on, dude. All right. I'm like Ma, dude.
I know there's one more bad one. I know there's one more real bad stinker on this list. Mile 22. That one stunk real bad.
Mile 22. Mile 22 was awkward because it was terrible. It just sponsored some Barstool stuff when we got on there. It's like, we didn't really talk about how horrible it was.
That was the Ronda Rousey, right? Mile 22?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bubble was atrocious.
Oh.
We reviewed, I think... Obviously, The Circle, Flatliners.
Yeah. The First Purge. Or we know. But 1517 to Paris came out while we started.
There's a really low-rated one on here from the Jizz Man. Though I hated it so much more than you did, though.
What movie?
The Binge.
Oh, yeah.
With the dick, right? The guy with his dick cut off. Yeah. That one was not good. The Kitchen. I forgot about that, too. Oh, and the Home Alone. Oh, okay. Home Alone one. That one's got to be way near the top of our horrible list. We rated that too high. It's in like the 80s.
Geostorm, Truth or Dare. God damn.
The Empty Man.
Another one that predated Gooch was maybe it was close though. You might have been around at that point. Thunder Force.
Oh, fuck.
With Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer.
Oh.
And Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale. Yes. Jason Bateman has a lobster arm. Yeah.
Lobster hands. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right.
Jexy. Oh, do you remember that with Adam Devine? The Siri movie he made? Jexy?
Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Oh, and Super Intelligence. Terrible. That was the other Melissa McCarthy, Bobby Cannavale one. That was really bad.
You talking about Ken Griffey Jr.?
Yeah. He was just Ken Griffey Jr. because they wanted to establish that he was from Seattle. Hey. And so they just mentioned Ken Griffey Jr. 5,000 times.
I love the kid. The kid, Ken Griffey Jr.
That's something I classically love as a Seattle born and bred guy. Ken Griffey Jr. and the fish market. Morbius.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, we have another podcast later in the week. We're going to do futures. So pick future movies, not just next year, but projects in the future. Again, we will still have this podcast, just not in the traditional form. Apology if that really pisses you off, but we will still have our content. It'll be tied up and wrapped together once a week in a podcast, but that's not till another 2 weeks. So that's it for Ken, Jack, and Gooch. I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.